Video game and merchandise has been an ever-growing thing, but thus far you haven't often seen a game's name in a grocery or other common personal goods store. But now, a 1980 stalwart and a 2010s breakout are both landing on more shelves. One of them is part of a balanced breakfast, and the other keeps you fresh, clean, and smooth. Guess which games, and guess which products. Wither Thin Geek, and you're not going to see these on GameStop shelves. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you which of these and about the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live here once again with episode number 953 of our show for tonight, March the 26th of 2023. My name is Rob Roberts, and I am joined week after week after week after week after week by my co-hosts. Say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
What's up?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Did you hear, have you heard the news, the latest news about my husband?
Something about a ban?
Yes, he's in Twitch jail right now.
Why?
Okay, so he loves to stream games with mods, right? So he was running a mod for Final Fantasy VII Remake that was showing Cloud running around in a jock strap. So his little booty was hanging out, and somebody decided that those assets were too hot for TV, and so he was delivered with a 3-day ban in the middle of the stream with 4 viewers watching. Which, here's the thing. Diablo 4 is like all the rage right now. Don't get me wrong, I love Diablo 4, but half of Twitch is streaming that limited access beta right now, right? And all of that death, dismemberment, violence, destruction, decapitation, you name it, all going on in that game. But, pun intended, Alan decides to show a risque mod and he gets banned. Now, look, I'm not complaining about what Twitch is doing because Alan knew he was toeing the line. He knew it was a little, risky what he was doing. So, he's a big boy and can take the big boy punishment. But I am pointing out there's a double standard here going on, folks. And I...
How many years have I been saying that?
Oh, forever. And how much do you want to bet if that mod had been a lady, it would not have been quick to have been reported? And that's just
probably facts. Our bodies are policed a lot more.
It would have been like, that needs to go in the hot tub streaming section. I mean, this is in the wrong section. Just letting you know.
So
our bodies are policed more and sexualized more. So I'd be surprised if it went on longer.
So it's just I don't know. I can't help but think like maybe even somebody we know or somebody had actually reported that. But I like to believe that the universe has a nice little way of dealing with those types of people. So I will just kind of,
it's an auto detect algorithm.
What's that?
Or it could have been an auto detect.
It wasn't his first time running that mod. It was a few streams in. So, I mean, and again, I'm not mad about, and neither is he, about what happened. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's just a ridiculous double standard in our society that the violence, and even when it comes to Twitch or whatever it is, an R-rated movie or what have you allows a certain amount of risqueness to it that for whatever reason, Twitch does not mirror. And that's, again, that's okay, but it's a bit of a double standard. I think the violence should be policed just as much if we're going to do that. So
that's pretty much been the cry of women everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, having our bodies policed when violence is certainly allowed everywhere.
Yeah.
So
I agree. Yeah. Anyway, also say hello. Sorry, I know you heard his voice in there too, but I also want
to take a call. That has nothing to do with body positivity. I'm just saying.
Whatever happened.
The two should be remotely combined.
I feel like I might know what angle he's taking with that comment. Is that, like, to me, I read that comment to be like, it's just a butt. And aren't butts whatever? Like, and that's how I kind of look at it, is that it's just a butt, people. It's just a butt.
Body positivity.
It's not even a real butt.
is a different thing than just someone showing their ass.
No.
So
anyway, hello, Techmaster Loki. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah. And how's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right.
Yeah, what's that game playing behind you tonight?
Red Dead Redemption
2. Oh, so I thought it was Red Dead Redemption, but I wasn't positive. Okay, fair enough. All right. Let's see. We do tape live, of course, every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And if you are watching along with the show, you can chat along with us. So I'm sorry, I'm laughing at a comment about something that happened before the podcast. And yes, the little joke bump that plays at the beginning when we go live, it was a joke about AI tonight, and I'm getting asked for screenshots about what we actually got the AI to say. And yes, I'm happy to send those over later after the show. I'll post them on Discord. Let's see. Dark Tetsuya appreciates the joke about assets. Yes. Questbuster talking about the AI joke. A Chinese company actually did appoint an AI as a CEO. Not joking. Really? I had not heard about that. I'd be very curious, you know, because this is all the rage now. And, you know, we even have a story later on in the show about it this week. I'd be very curious to kind of know more about that. So anyway, for the sake of the podcast listeners, one of the quote unquote jokes I put in there is I asked, it was Google Bard. And I asked, I said, do you think Bobby Kotick should be CEO of Activision? And it actually spit out a response and said, these are all the things that he's done wrong. And for these reasons, including his rampant, all the sexual harassment that went on Activision Blizzard while he was over it, he should be fired. And I was like, Google Bard, smarter than the board at Activision Blizzard.
I think an actual turd would make a better CEO.
Agree. Actual AI would make a better CEO.
No. I'm saying I can dig a turd out of my cat box,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a pea clump, and that would do better than him.
I agree. All right, let's get into our official story at the top here before we get into our gaming weeks. Let's talk about this. This is interesting because it kind of has to do with, you know, we've been talking about Diablo 4, and a lot of games that we play right now in this day and age are always online. And this used to be something you would get a lot more pushback on, but that kind of seems to have faded a lot in the last few years. I kind of wanted to dissect that a little bit. But first, let's talk about like what's happening with the whole back and forth on that. Loki, I'll turn it over to you.
So basically, they had announced that Redfall was going to have a single player campaign, and that it's still always online as well. So if you wanted to play, you know, single player, then you're stuck being connected to the internet. And of course, people were not happy with that and let their voices be heard. And so because of that, the game director, Harvey Smith, said that, you know, they've listened to the players and have a lot of empathy for folks who don't have consistent internet connections. As we do take complaints about always online with a lot of empathy. We listen and we've already started work to address this. And in the future, we have some things like to encrypt your saves and do a bunch of UI work to support it. And we're looking into, I'm not supposed to promise anything, but we're looking into actively towards fixing that in the future. I don't know. So why did it require an online connection in the first place? Well, I guess, you know, in-game purchases. It says always online allowed us to do some accessibility stuff. I'm rolling my eyes really big there. It allows us for telemetry, like if everybody's fallen off ladders and dying, you know, then we can go and tweak the ladder code. I don't know. I don't think that other games don't necessarily do that. Like, you could have that without being always online because people would report bugs to you and then you go and fix those bugs. Like, that's kind of what you'd do with that. Like, you wouldn't. Like, are you really going to be looking at all that data? I doubt it.
A comment from Bobby Blackwolf in our chat saying they've been doing this telemetry stuff forever, though. Doesn't need to be always online. They just upload data at other times. So, but Bobby says they do look at that data. I wonder if it's, you know, I think sometimes we have the impression they don't look at the data piece by piece, and they probably don't look at the data piece by piece. They look at trends and big
right.
clumps of data.
Yeah, they would they probably would use it to further back up, like say, someone's like saying, hey, you know, going back to the ladder issue, I'm having an issue, you know, being able to climb that ladder. They could then go look at, you know, that ladder object or whatever and seeing people interact with it and can get a better idea of like, is this an isolated issue? Is this something that all the players are experiencing? Yeah, it helps with further bolster and, I guess, prioritize errors that they need to fix or tweaks or rebalances, whatever, that type of stuff. But if that were the case that all the games are doing that, which they're not, then everything would be always online. So I think there's other ways around that.
Yeah. Comments in chat, SJ100 Matt says, it's all about keeping the game from being pirated as well. You know, I was just thinking the other day, I don't hear a lot about torrents anymore. I'm sure, and I'm not being completely naive. Yes, I know it's all still out there, folks. I'm not, like, completely naive. But I feel like a lot of that isn't as, like, piracy doesn't feel as mainstream now as it used to feel. And I don't know if a lot of that is because of, like, streaming and the capabilities that has brought. Like, and here's the thing, you know, if you want to take piracy way, way back to, like, the late 90s, early aughts, when it was
LimeWire.
Yeah, LimeWire, Napster. What was the other big one? But there were all these ways to, you know, the peer-to-peer file transferring and all that stuff where we were basically pirating music. But then what happened to the industry? iTunes happened.
Oh, my God.
iTunes happened, and it didn't completely shut that down, but boy, oh boy, did it scale it way back. And sure, there was still torrents of, you know, CD quality albums and things like that. And that all is still out there, I'm sure, but especially not just iTunes, but now that we've taken that and transitioned into Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, all these, you know, what's the title, you know, all these, you know, different music streaming services. It's just not nearly as prevalent because the option is still there to do these streamings and get that, like, instant gratification of, like, whatever it is you're looking for. And a lot of streaming TV services seem to do this now, which is why I feel like there's less and less of the piracy that's going on. Yeah, and
yeah, I don't think that they have anything for, like, the Xbox Series S or X right now that there is, like, even a piracy scene for it. I mean, at some point, if they, you know, exploit the console in a way that they can do that, then, yeah, that might be a thing. Like, the Xbox 360 is really bad, but...
I want to make sure I'm very clear on this. I'm not naive to the fact that piracy still exists. Of course it still exists and it's going on out there. I'm just saying the percentage of average Joes and Janes and, you know, folks out there that are participating in that seems to be lower. I mean, that could be a confirmation bias or a personal thing. I don't know, but I feel like we're not, like, even on, like, Twitter and social media, we don't see people as brazen about posting that type of stuff anymore that we used to. I feel like that level of the mainstreamization of piracy in a way is scaled back a little bit, especially when it comes to games. It just doesn't seem like it's as big of a threat as it used to be.
Yeah, I think on, like, Xbox right now, the closest thing that you have with that is just, you know, there's stuff being run in the dev mode, but that's more like emulators and stuff like that. That's less, you know, I don't think anyone's actually pirating anything with that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, torrent stuff nowadays, it's TV shows, movies, that type of stuff, for the most part, software, maybe PC game piracy to a certain extent, although I would think that that's probably dropped down even still. Although now that games are going back up to $70, you know, even PC, that might kick back up again. But
if the games can run offline, which a lot of them this day and age don't anymore, it seems like.
Well, I mean, there's patches for everything. So, like, I wouldn't say that, yeah, like your typical retail game may not run, you know, always online. But, I mean, we've learned things like, remember SimCity? Oh, yeah, it's impossible for that to run.
Good point. Good point.
Except it wasn't.
Point taken. It's just interesting to me because I feel like, okay, so I'm also looking at a lot of things through the lens of this Diablo 4 beta that's going on this weekend. And, you know, there was a limited beta last weekend. And obviously I'm a big Diablo fan. But Diablo 4, as far as I know, and chat, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't see how I am on this because the queue issues are a big issue to get into the game. But Diablo 4 is an always online game, as was Diablo 3. And Diablo 3 got a lot of shit about always being online. So much so that when the console versions of Diablo 3 came out, they were offline and it was a selling point. Now, granted, Diablo 3 also had this huge problem. Remember, what Diablo 3 looks like today and what it looked like the day it launched are very different products, because the other thing Diablo 3 had that people did not like was that real money auction house, hence the reason why it had to always be online. Now, Diablo 4 doesn't have a real money auction house because Activision Blizzard done learned their lesson from that whole thing. but it does have cosmetics, the battle pass, a lot of things that games as a service kind of have, although Blizzard swears up and down they're not going to tie that to content, so we'll see if they're true to their word on all of that. But I guess my point is, I feel like the buzz about Diablo 4 being always online, I'm not seeing people complain about that. Have we just gotten to a point here a decade later that we just assume that a lot of games are going to require an online connection and we don't care as much about that anymore? That's really the point I'm trying to get to. Do we as gamers just accept that more games are just, they're always going to be online because that's the way games are. They're connected, and whether that be because they're really trying to push multiplayer or it's a game as a service and all the things that come with that, your battle passes, your cosmetics, your shops and all that. Although, I mean, single player games, I mean, the very first Ludicrous DLC was for a single player game, and that's Elder Scrolls Oblivion and the horse armor, right? That set the standard for all cosmetic DLC to follow. That was a single player game. So you don't have to always have your game online to do that type of stuff. But I digress. I'm curious, what do you all think about this? Like, do you think we as gamers accept this now? Let me get some comments from chat. Questbuster says, I accept that more games are always going to be online, but I don't have to like it. Fair enough. Fifth Dream brings up a point about the annoyingness of games being online sometimes. That rubber banding, even when you're soloing in, I think, Diablo. Oh, D-I-V, D4. Why don't you just put D4? Why do you put the Roman numerals? I was like, what's div? Okay, I get it. I get it. Even when you're soloing in D4 is eh. So yeah, and then the monsters are that. So yeah, there are some annoyances that come with the always online thing too, is that like even when you're solo player, you're going to encounter issues. Now, I chalk a lot of these things up to the fact it's beta, and hopefully they iron some of these things out before June. I actually wasn't having a lot of problems with rubber banding, though, to be quite honest. I wasn't having, my problems seemed to be more graphical in nature for high-end stuff, and I actually took my graphics down a setting to get it to work, but I noticed they released updated drivers, and that might actually fix my issue. I don't know. But I am chalking a lot of this up to the lovely parts of a beta. But anyway, let me go back to the question at hand. Do you think that we as gamers have just accepted that more and more games are going to be online? Do any of my co-hosts have a standpoint on this?
I mean, if it makes sense, like in the sense of a game, like if it's a multiplayer game or something like that that requires always online connection. But I think for like a single player game where conceivable, there's no real reason to have that type of connection. It really shouldn't be, because we've seen examples where this just fails. Like Assassin's Creed had a lot of those games that were always online. And when their authentication servers go down, well, hey, now you can't play your single player game. You know, like that's really stupid to be designing a game like that. And for what reason were they doing that? Probably monetization. You know, they'll probably make some excuse like, oh, it was telemetry, whatever, you know, like. But in the end, like when those servers go down, then news reports go out about how, oh, hey, look at this unnecessary thing that's going on. Like it really, I don't think it's absolutely necessary to have an always online connection for things. I know in the past it was because like, hey, this is one other way we're going to try to stave off piracy, which never worked. It never did. So I don't know the reason. Typically, the reason that they want to do that isn't for the benefit of the player. It's for the benefit of the company and to make more money. That's typically why they're doing it.
Hashtag blame telemetry. All right.
It's not telemetry. It's usually monetization.
It is not telemetry.
It is monetization. Like it typically is the reason why that they want that always online. So that you nasty cheaters out there can't get that item that you're supposed to be paying $5 for or something like that. Like it's that
it's
nonsense.
It's about control.
Did you want to elaborate, Jamie, before I go to chat?
Well, I mean, I would hope I would have had a turn to say my piece.
Of course.
But I'm always against the always online thing, except in the case of multiplayer. I think that if you're trying to check for like a cheat, then there should be like an initial, you know, check for, you know, any bad stuff that shouldn't be there, and then let you play the game. I mean, I back in the day, there were other ways to know if a game was pirated. I mean, if it was like you would like get to a point of the game and you couldn't play it because it wasn't official software, or it would come up with a message that says, hey, thank you for trying the game, buy the full version, you know, because they knew about it. You know, it's unnecessary. We were fine without it before, you know. It's just about control. It's controlling their product. It's loss prevention. And monetization can be a big part of it, but in the end, it's wanting to make sure that their asset is protected, that they're actually making the money on the asset and not the copies are not there.
Yeah. And who cares if somebody cheats in single player? That used to, that was old gaming, was cheating in single player, you know, and we can sit here in our fucking rocking chairs being like, I remember when I used up, up, down, down, left, right to be able to get through the first stage in Gradius and get my Contra lives, except for Jamie, who's sitting there going, I don't need the 30 lives code.
Oh, come on. I suck at Gradius.
Sorry, Matt, I was transitioning into Contra there, but yes.
Oh, well, Contra, I don't know anyone. Okay, I take that back. Dan's good at Contra. But, like, I actually do not enjoy playing Contra, for the record.
I enjoy playing it for a little bit, but I you know, it's a fun throwback. You know, anyway.
I've never actually enjoyed playing a Contra game.
We have some really good insight from chat, and I want to get some of these comments here because I think this is really interesting. Fixation Gaze in chat says, the cool thing about cheating has died. Modding now feels more like how cheat codes used to be. Well, it also kind of feels like that people are selling cheat codes now. You know, why allow you to do up, up, down, down 30 lives when I can sell you a life kit that has extra lives in it, which is what a lot of games do these days, right? I thought this was a really insightful comment, actually. This is just about a gold star level comment to me. This is silver star level. It's from ZenMonkey11, who says, Zoomers accept all that crap. They grew up with consoles that connect to the internet, so they don't care. I care. That's why I don't buy always online games if I can help it. I actually thought that was very interesting because you even think about that term Zoomers and how that generation got that term. And that's because of, you know, the fact that we've got a whole generation of kids who've grown up now with a couple of years in online school and Zoom school and being connected and finding connections for birthday parties. I mean, we all had to go through it with the pandemic lockdowns, but you know, now, especially we have a generation that's grown up on that. So it almost kind of leads to that whole thought of, and again, I'm not trying to make it like an age. I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to make broad stroke judgments based solely on age. However, you know, is it possible that younger folks, because there's that always online connection and these other ways, have just grown up to accept that there is going to always be a sense of always being connected online? Because sometimes, as we've unfortunately learned, that may be all the connection there is at some points. Oh, no, I thought that was a very interesting perspective. Some other comments in chat. Let's see. Sean322 says, I don't mind always being online as long as someone doesn't pick up the phone and disconnect me. Oh, sorry. Flashback from the AOL dial-up days. Yes, yes. SheHulk10 says, if the world is ever changing, then online single player is fun. You know, and when it comes to like Diablo 4, I don't mind it. I like the sense of like the world being alive and seeing other people and all of that stuff. So if there's kind of like a point that makes sense, I don't just hate it on its merits alone, but I also like, it's one of those weird things where like, as a gamer who plays and consumes a lot of games, is like, you kind of know when a game needs to be online to enhance it. And when the only reason it's having you online is for telemetry, quote unquote. So I'm using my quotey fingers to represent for the online shop is what I really mean. I feel like a lot of our bullshit detectors are very strong and we can sense when a game doesn't really need to be online and how that can be very frustrating. So,
I completely, by the way, agree with Fixie in chat. In response to what E3VIL said, I'm just going to say evil, that kids know how to fucking read a book, okay, dude? Kids, the letters on an e-reader are the same as the letters in a book. It's just a matter of convenience. That makes zero sense to me. I don't get why you say that. Okay, but how hard is it to fucking turn a page?
They
know how to turn a page on a book. I guarantee you.
There's these clickbaity articles out there that talk about, I know where this school of thought comes from, and it's the clickbait social media culture, is that there's that clickbaity article about that. The five-year-old is handed a book and they try to do this to the book. And I'm doing a swiping motion with my finger. They try to do this to the book because they don't understand, because they've never seen a physical book before. And these are clickbaity articles that are all over Facebook and social media. I see where that is coming from. I do. But it doesn't take, but also, yes, to your point and what Fixie's saying, it takes 30 seconds to figure it out. But boy, oh boy, do the parents love to tell the entire neighborhood about that 30 seconds about their kid trying to swipe the book.
Like, they're bragging about their kid not being able to figure something out.
That's what it is.
I stop trying to make kids look stupid or foolish or unable to figure out earlier technology or things like that. It's ridiculous. Kids are smarter than we give them credit for. You know, we were all there too. We were smarter than we were given credit for. Let's just stop spreading this really toxic stereotype. You know, it's trying to do an us versus them thing. Every generation tries to do it, and it should just be us.
And
we have responsibility to help them, and they're going to be the next generation. It's just us.
And that has been something, unfortunately, I don't disagree with Shane at all, but unfortunately, this has been a thing that's been around for generations. You know, I think back to to TV shows from the 70s. Kids say the darndest things, and it's all about the wacky, wild things kids do.
I mean, all right, so think back to, like, 1984 with a Mac in front of you, you know. You didn't know what to do with a computer the first time you saw one. It's like, is this a typewriter?
Yeah.
But you figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sitting down with your first video game console, you're not going to be instantly good at it. You got to figure it out. And the example with the kids with the rotary phone, I mean, they're not stupid. They figure it out eventually that, okay, you turn the thing to make the thing go. You know, they know what a receiver is, right? Because
you see it in a movie.
No, it's obvious.
It is.
One has ear, one has mouth. It's like your headset.
And even if you hold it backwards, it still kind of works. I know that from being a kid. All right. Let's move on and talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. And I will start with Dark Sakura.
I have, of course, been playing Dead by Daylight. I played Marvel Midnight Suns last night because I got the wrong controller again. I mean, I have a use for it, so it's not that big of a deal, but I bought another controller to see if I can play Star Ocean next weekend. I did all of my testing with Oshaberry Proteus, so there has been some Proteus and Jackie Crush in my life also in the week. And then I played, of course, my stupid Wordscapes, because I'm getting to the point now where I'm solving the quote super hard puzzles in 10 to 15 seconds. And then sometimes my brain is just so like what's this word? You know, so I'm going back and forth with it. Playing more Beatlemania pinball because it's fucking fun. We have a Dracula, but I've never liked that table. I played something else, and for the life of me, I cannot think of what the crap it was. Now, maybe I'm just thinking of Parodius and Jackie Crush for Super Famicom. But yeah, that's been... I'm dipping back into some of my old school loves. And again, if anyone doesn't know, Jackie Crush is the third in the Crush series of pinball games. So there's Alien Crush. Why? Wait, why can't my brain think of the other alien one?
Devil.
Devil's Crush. And then Jackie Crush. Brain farts. And I'm actually thinking about going back to playing Demon's Tilt just on, like, you know, off nights. Yeah. It's such a good spiritual successor. It's such a good game. Oh, and I've been sort of laughing to myself about the Dead Hard nerf and the joke that Behavior made about nerfed the pig. And really, they just gave her improved one of her perks. Because Behavior gets the memes. That was pretty funny. Oh, yeah, and the Circle of Healing nerf, there's that too, but that one I'm not like all up in arms about it because I was never a booner. The slower healing I'm irritated about, and I can get into that. I wish I'd put it into like my chosen story thing because they put out a big developer update with a lot of changes that have people losing their shit on the internet. Because they always lose their shit on the internet.
I'll be right back, but continue on, Loki, tell you guys what's going on in a minute.
Okay. Well, I mean, just in a nutshell, the big ones that people are irritated about are the Dead Hard nerf, which means you now have to unhook somebody to get the benefit from. I don't know. I hate Dead Hard, and I've never used it on purpose, except for, like, twice. And then the Circle of Healing, yeah, still it now requires that you have a med kit to be able to self-care. I think that's ridiculous. And then slowing down the rate of healing with a med kit is also ridiculous. Whatever behavior. All right, but anyway, Loki.
I was just working on Minecraft stuff this week. Mostly just finishing up a build and editing. Still working on editing, hoping to have my new episode out here soon. The problem is, every time I introduce a robot master in the series, I have to hand animate the stage like intro thing that they do in like Mega Man 2, and it takes time. It's annoying, but I have to do it because perfection. So hopefully we'll have a new episode out, hopefully by tomorrow.
Awesome. Ooh.
That's about it. Yeah.
Good luck. Is it still no word on the Minecraft contest from a couple weeks ago? All right. I'm trying. I'm thinking about it. All right. My game of week. Actually, before I get to my game of week, let me talk about something else real quick because it has to do with what I just disappeared about. So, you know, and a lot of you know about. Huh?
I hope everything's okay.
It's actually not about me. It's about Mr. Smush. And I think maybe you've caught about some of this from social media and stuff. Oh, no, because I don't really post on Twitter as much as I used to. So here's the thing. Here's what's going on. So Mr. Smush gave us a little bit of a scare on Wednesday, and we ended up spending like 7 hours at the emergency vet because he was very lethargic, not wanting to move. We could tell he wasn't really wanting to move his back legs, like something was kind of going on there. So we thought he may have had a seizure or something like may have happened. So we took him in and they ruled out
renal failure, maybe.
Well, they ruled out that, he can still use his back legs cause they were warm. They weren't cold. And we ended up going to the ER vet and we spent a lot of money. We didn't spend too, cause we could have gotten an MRI for $7,000, but I have to draw the line somewhere. So they did some x-rays and, we kind of found out the next day that the x-rays were showing that he probably has a calcified disc in his back, which doesn't happen in cats as often as it does in dogs. That's usually a thing for dogs, but they say it can happen in cats. You know, Mr. Smush is a special cat, but it kind of explains like, oh, this is why when we found him, he was on the stairs, but at the halfway point. And like he didn't want to continue the journey up or down the stairs, whichever way he was going. He was kind of hiding behind the scratching post there. So we've kind of noticed since then, now that we're starting to get some answers, we've kind of noticed that he does have an aversion to stairs. He'll use them if he's motivated by food. He'll still try to go down, even though he shouldn't be. So we have a baby gate on the way from Amazon to try to stave that off. But he'll try to use the stairs still if he's food motivated. But otherwise, he's kind of not using it. So we moved all their, for those that know the layout of my house, we moved all the cat food upstairs. So the cats have everything they need upstairs. So he shouldn't have a need to go downstairs, but he just kind of does it for whatever. You can't tell a cat no, right? Like, or stop that, you'll hurt yourself. So, at the end of the day, you know, the reality is he's an extremely inbred cat. He was a rescue, and he was a very special kind of rescue.
He has cool David Bowie eyes, too.
He does. That's why the thought was originally it could have been neurological, because the eyes are a sign that he's always had something kind of up neurologically. But the x-ray kind of makes us think, and especially his behaviors. It's like, oh, he has an aversion to stairs. Okay, yeah, he doesn't really want to use his back or whatever. But the reality is he's old. He's like a 10-year-old cat at this point, which for his breed is getting pretty old. So it was scary. We thought
that's right. Yeah, you got smooshy kind of around the time I got Midna.
Well, it was the same year my mom passed. It was 2017. So, and yeah, he was already 3 or 4 based on the vet's estimate. For all we know, it could be older.
Yeah, it wasn't too long after I'd gotten Midna. I mean, yeah, it was just a few years. So, and Midna's turning 11 on my birthday next month.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So anyway, not to bring, and thank you. I see you all in chat sending the love, and thank you. It's received, and thank you very much for that. And I just know, you know, y'all know the cat, Mr. Smush, and all that, but that's just something we've been kind of dealing with. And that's why I just went off screen here, because I can see from where I'm at, I have a view of the staircase, and I could see him kind of going meow, meow, and kind of pacing around. I thought, oh, is he wanting to go downstairs? But Alan thinks he's just hungry because it's about that time. So he's just out there complaining about food to anyone that'll
listen.
Daddy.
Yeah. I've had a hard time. Give me extra food.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, he's getting spoiled now. Not only did his dad spend, again, a lot of money.
A lot.
On that.
I know cat expenses.
Yeah. And I'm sure many folks out there know, you know, it's just one of those things that it's never, and you're a captive in that moment. You will do whatever it takes to help your little, you know, furry friend. So it's rough.
But anyway. I've already decided that with my next cat, I'm getting insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably something
I can't afford to get Midna's teeth fixed.
Yeah.
So I just have to brush her teeth and give her antibiotic, you know, stuff for her water and hope for the best.
Yep. So, and it was interesting watching Cheddar kind of respond to the whole thing too, because he was kind of like, what the hell's going on? And then he was really staying away from all of us when we got back. He would not, and we were like, what's, and then we're like, oh, because we smell like the vet and all those other animals that were there. So it took him about a day for him to warm back up to us. So is very interesting. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, not to divert too much, but that's what's going on. So now that I think about it, Alan wrote a couple tweets, but I understand a tweet can get lost amongst all the other stuff. And yeah, it's just hard to update everybody.
Work the last 4 days, so yeah, it's hard for me to check except in those little crazy bursts.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah. I just gonna say Midna's been extra all upon, but
yeah,
she just has allergies.
Yeah, yeah. So when I did play games this week, when I wasn't too taken over by that, I've played a little bit of the Diablo 4 beta this weekend, although granted not nearly as much as I was playing last weekend, because I finally got that point. As much as I love Diablo 4, I've kind of got to that point where I'm like, okay, well, they're going to erase these characters anyway. I've hit 25, which is the max level in the beta, and not only will I have my pet dog thing that you get at 20, but I entered myself into the contest to get painted into the chapel in France, whatever they're doing, if you actually get to 25, because that'll be fun. Can you imagine my face in a chapel somewhere? I hope I win. I've never wanted to win a contest more in my life. So I did everything I could do with that. And so I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, okay, well, I screwed around with some of the new classes, but the reality is, let's just wait for the game to come out at this point. I'm happy to stress test, so I did that a little bit this weekend. I played, I sat in the queue for a little bit, but I didn't need to hit the pavement as hard as I was doing last week and ensuring that I hit the max level I could. But I'm still loving Diablo 4. Absolutely, I'm buying it when it comes out. Can't wait. Other games I've been playing, a little bit of Theatrhythm, but not a lot. I think I did stream that a little bit this week because I finished No Man's Sky Expedition 9 on Monday. It only took me about another 45 minutes on stream, and I finished the expedition and got the rewards. So yay, that was an accomplishment. I beat something. That was an accomplishment. And then I played more Theatrhythm, which I still have not played every song one time yet. There's still like at least probably 50 more songs I'm going to make my way through, but there's just so many songs in that game. So honestly, between all those things, that's pretty much my gaming week. So we'll move on. Let's get into some other headlines. I was trying to think if there's any like housekeeping or programming notes, but not really. We don't have any planned trips or anything that'll take the show away coming up. So we'll be here for the next few weeks, as long as we have power and all that good stuff. All right, Loki, let's get into some news.
Yeah, so this is pretty exciting. Out of nowhere, there is the announcement that Valve is putting out Counter-Strike 2, which is going to be a free update for Counter-Strike Go, which will completely redo the whole game. So they had some trailers that they put out, kind of talk about the different game mechanics that they're adding to it. So, for example, they have volumetric smoke grenades now, which look really cool. They kind of react to bullet shots and also other explosions nearby. They're going to have something that's like a subtick, so it basically allows for more accurate positioning of players and bullets and that type of stuff. They're overhauling the maps, as well as keeping some of the older maps as well, kind of like they're kind of doing it in three different phases. So they have the older maps that they're kind of giving new like lighting effects to and that type of stuff, but essentially they're could be exactly the same. Then there's some updated maps that they're adding, you know, like more features to that kind of utilize more of Counter-Strike 2, and then like some fully redone maps. Higher resolution models for the guns, new Source 2 tools for modders, new blood splatters, and let's see, they said completely reauthored explosions and more accurate audio. It looks pretty sweet.
Bigger and badder explosions.
Exactly. The smoke looks cool too. Like I think that's kind of the fun stuff. They're saying that all existing Counter-Strike Go skins will transfer to Counter-Strike 2, and they'll be also more visually detailed. So that's kind of cool. You know, get all that stuff to go along with it. Yeah, excited to see what else they do with that. Talk about, you know, last week how gamers are eating good. Well, it's
putting
more food out.
Well, you know, with Counter-Strike, this like kind of upgrade, this is a little bit like you know, Counter-Strike 2, or I guess really Counter-Strike Go to Counter-Strike 2 is kind of like Overwatch to Overwatch 2, right? Like this is meant to replace the base game.
I mean,
right? Well, except more. Yeah. Like they didn't really do as much in 2 Overwatch 2 comparisonly, but it is meant to be
Overwatch
a replacement.
Overwatch 2 is essentially Overwatch 1, but yeah, basically it is an overhaul to the original game.
Okay. And it's meant to replace it, and I heard it's going to be free to those that already have Counter-Strike, basically, which I mean, how many people haven't picked up Counter-Strike in some kind of bundle over the years or some kind of sale on Valve? Like that game's been out a long time. You probably have it in your library and you don't even know it, you know, like it's, you got it somewhere. So that's interesting. That'll be coming out, you know, the sequel. It's also nice that Valve is finally putting out a game that isn't VR. For the rest of us that, you know, aren't quite on board with the VR stuff still, it's nice. Granted, I haven't played Counter-Strike since the original Xbox. I'm not even talking the original Xbox. I mean, the last time I played Counter-Strike, but still.
It is nice that they still avoided using 3, technically, since this is like the third Counter-Strike game, but it is Counter-Strike 2, so still no 3s in the Valve's
library. That's right. They don't have to break their habit there. Let's see. E3 VL does point out at least they didn't go the free to play model like Overwatch. So that is also it. Well, do we know of any types of microtransactions, battle passes, things they might be looking to add since they are essentially giving this away for free?
Well, I don't think it's anything different than what they have now. Was it the gun skins? Don't they have all that stuff? Like, isn't that a whole thing? Like, don't they have crates and stuff?
Yeah, I
thought
there
was the whole
skin
gambling stuff.
True, like, true.
Yeah, so I assume that's still a thing.
And Chad is debating if this is actually fourth or fifth Counter-Strike. Mike Def says OG, Counter-Strike, Source, Go, and now 2. E3 VL is counting one called Condition Zero as well. So there's been a few Counter-Strike games.
None of them number 3, though.
No, none of them 3. No. All right. Moving on, let's talk about this, which, by the way, also kind of plays into the whole, like, reminder, since we're going to be talking about Nintendo. I think we have an email on it later, so I won't go too far in depth, but, you know, we talked about it already last week, really, but the Nintendo eShop is basically going to be closing at some point very soon, tomorrow, but we don't know when. Is that 12:01? Is that 11:59? We don't know when tomorrow, but, you know, we're in the last dawn of the final day, basically, of the Wii U and 3DS eShops. I know we have an email on it later. I'll wait till we get to that. But, you know, it has a lot of us kind of either making those last few purchases, or for me, I'm kind of like, why would I reward Nintendo for this right now? I'm not going to, but I don't want to tell people what they should and shouldn't do. I understand why people want to do their last minute shopping and get those things before they go away. I'm kind of like, I don't want to reward Nintendo for this decision. Like, I bought what I bought and that's it. So, but here's a concept I do want to reward because I think this sounds great. And this is a retro game project coming out for the Switch. It's called Project Egg. This is still a tentative title. It is from D4 Enterprise, and it's something that they're going to be using to release titles from their retro games distribution service for the Switch. And these are going to be games for platforms like MSX, PC9801, PC8801. This is also a platform that's going to be used Pico Pico for smartphones, and they say virtual console for Wii U, Wii, and 3DS, but I don't. I think they're talking about that they have released games prior on these systems. So if you want to go back and look at those systems, kind of see like what is that? Sorry, that's just a very oddly worded phrase there. But if you want to see the types of games they have released, they're in those archives. EGG, if you are curious, stands for Engrossing Game Gallery. Which, of course, is leading to all of those memes of, can I offer you an egg in these trying times? Some of the games I recognize just from the screenshots. I notice Hyde Lied in there. This sounds like it's neat. What I like about it is these are, I hope this comes out for the U.S. It does look very Japanese-based, but of course, the Switch is reason-free. I hope that... there's some really good stuff in there. I like the obscure type of stuff. Oh, one of the Cotton games is in here. I see in the screenshot, actually. I know Jamie loves that series. Revival Xanadu is also called out by name there. So there's just a lot of like obscure but cool titles in here. And that's exactly the types of stuff we should be celebrating in these retro catalogs. So I think this is neat. So props to D4 for working on this and making it happen. So
there was a thing it said in there too, like and I noticed like when it translated the what, you know, talking about Project Egg, it says general creators people will be able to sell software created for retro consoles, so I guess homebrew software. Mm-hmm. Like their PC8801, PC9801, X68000, FM7, X1, MSX, etc.
Holy moly. So looking at this list over on, because I guess on Wiki, there's actually a big old list there in the D4 Enterprise article. I did not realize it was this large of a library. Oops, sorry, folks. I just accidentally placed this over the webcam capture. But look at this. Like, there are 1,084 games on this list. I have no idea how to even organize a list like this. But it does have things for the arcade, including Double Dragon is in there. A lot of Famicom-based games.
Karnov.
Yeah, Karnov. So you get an idea of the types of like developers that they're working with and so forth. So this is going to be a very beefy collection whenever it comes out for Switch. So that's really cool. So, oops. Not that, sorry. Having to produce, do camera angles and all that on the fly is hard sometimes. So sorry for the awkwardness on Twitch shots sometimes. All right. Dartusia also points out, if you want to see a YouTube channel that has short video clips of these games, that is also available with Project Egg. All right, let's move on to some not so great news, but unfortunately one we're hearing a lot in this industry lately. Dark Sakura.
Well, and it's full of a lot of just like excuse talk to me. But at any rate, more than 400 Twitch employees got laid off because of what Amazon's going through. Amazon announced another 9,000 job cuts, adding to the 18,000 layoffs from January. And then about 400 employees from Twitch are affected in that whole business. Twitch didn't give the impacted employees any sort of advance notice ahead of the announcement on the 20th. The CEO just basically sent out an all staff email that people affected would be informed no later than early next week. And it's just, again, just a bunch of excuse talk. The CEO, Clancy, is blaming the layoffs on, quote, current macroeconomic environment and user and revenue growth that has not kept pace with our expectations, end quote. In other words, I'm going to throw out a bunch of jargon on there and hope that it sounds important enough for you to believe it. In a nutshell, they're not making the money we thought they did. So now we fucked up, and now we have to fuck up these people's lives.
Well, and who misforecast that? I mean, I understand Twitch grew a lot during the pandemic, and so there's a little bit of a, like, the tide receding a little bit as, you know, things, pandemic lockdowns have practically ended pretty much across the globe at this point, that a lot of that is receding a little bit, but you would think that somebody could have seen that coming. It's weird. But at least there's this. This is interesting to me. When I heard this was the interesting news. Emmett Shear, the former CEO, just left last week. So I can't sit here and be like, well, why does nothing ever happen to the CEO? Well, okay. I mean, now, do we think that the CEO left because they, you know, did Emmett Shear leave because this news was coming? I mean, in a variety of ways, probably yes. He probably left when he did, so he didn't have to do this. It's probably one of those things that was brought down, and so he kind of ran off into the night. But at least I can't sit here and go, why hasn't the guy who's been CEO for the last few years been held accountable? He did bow out. I will give him that credit. That there's lots of CEOs in this industry who don't do that. So I'll give him that for what it's worth. But it is.
Still, it's garbage, and it's... Instead of investing in their employees and pushing the company to do better or finding other ways to use that talent pool, they're just saying, oh, no, we just don't want to pay you. Bye. I hate it.
Maybe if there was more synergy with the rest of Amazon going on, because that's the other thing that blows my mind about Twitch sometimes, is that, like, I feel like they live in a bubble that so much, and I know I've talked about this on the show, and I'm sorry to repeat myself, but that so much of Amazon feels so siloed, and that I'm quite frankly shocked that Luna isn't more integrated into Twitch. Not that I'm saying I want that. I'm just shocked they haven't taken more of an opportunity to do that. It's wild to me.
Yeah, they are really, they're just fucking the whole thing up. I mean, they acquire a platform that they don't truly understand, you know, to service people who do things that I think they don't truly understand. And then I just don't think that they know what they're doing.
I mean,
I'll be honest.
It should be this easy, as like, if Dark Sakura is going, hey, we need one more for our Swift in Dead by Daylight because somebody couldn't make it tonight. Let's do one more for our Swift. You should be able to click a button and fire up Dead by Daylight on Luna and be able to join her Swift right away. By the way, that was the thing in Stadia.
Not there.
But it's not there.
It's not on
Luna. Dead by Daylight's not on Luna? Okay, bad example. I just assumed they put that game everywhere. My bad. Okay, but that example, but a game that is on Luna still should hold some water here. So
I mean, it doesn't really matter the streaming service. If there's a streaming service that's owned by a company that also has live streaming service, you know, like a game streaming service with a company that owns their own streaming service, like how the Google integration when Stadia was around, you pressed a button and it would link up to a live play on your YouTube channel.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, Stadia did it right and they got fucked over because Google's got this other weird announcement now about another company that they're working with for cloud-based gaming. And I'm just like, I hate you. I officially hate you right now.
Don't talk to me. Don't speak. I don't hear that. Yeah, exactly. Talk to the hand because the wallet doesn't want it.
Exactly. But like, I'm just, I maybe it's that I don't have that corporate mindset. I mean, I don't want to be a manager and I don't want to be corporate, you know, But at the same time, you know, I work for a company that is all about utilizing its talent pool instead of laying people off. You know, we have positions open in our company and they're hiring from other groups in the same company to cover those things instead of laying people off. I can't say where I work. Some of y'all know. Don't say anything. But I think that Amazon and a lot of these gaming companies that are laying off all these people need to actually really take a look at their business model and see why they're getting themselves into this puddle to begin with. You know, you can't keep doing things the same way they've always been done and get yourself into this pattern of fuckery. You know, the quote is, the definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what you're doing. You're hamsters in a wheel and the wheel keeps spinning and spinning. You need to do something different.
Yeah.
You need to take a risk and do something fucking different.
I want to get the comments from chat. There's a lot of good stuff in chat right now. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, there's also political infighting inside these large companies. Different divisions don't necessarily like each other and will not work to help everyone else. So the Luna and Twitch teams might not be on good terms with each other and are actively avoiding having to work together. Oh my God. Then that, if that, I mean, I know that's hypothesizing, but if that was a thing, then that falls on Jeff Bezos to walk in there and say, you fucking make it work. Period. And the head of Luna and the head of Twitch, your asses are on the line to make this work. Like this is wild. I mean, I'm not disputing what you're saying, Bobby, but it's wild to me that can happen in a profitable company.
If your job,
oh, sorry, I forgot Jeff Bezos retired, but you know what I mean?
If your job is to do what is necessary as dictated by your upper management to make something work, it does not matter how you feel about working with another department. End of story. Your assignment is to work together. So if they're not working together, this is coming from higher up than they are.
Mm-hmm. Fixation Gaze says, it feels like Amazon is using Twitch as a passive income and get upset when record profits manipulating a sick market aren't beaten. Absolutely. Absolutely. This is just supposed to be Amazon's little money printing thing, and they're not thinking about how they could better integrate it into the rest of their business and make it more profitable from that standpoint. It's very silly. Phil of Nine says, I always wonder about how huge these tech companies got. It always seemed like they ballooned so quickly. 2003 called and says, history repeats itself. But yes,
I mean, but that's exactly what I was saying about that pattern that nobody seems to learn from.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, you know, what took down the Roman Empire? The fucking Roman Empire. It's going to happen again. The companies are going to get too big and explode.
WN Record, or is it WN Record? Because English is a silly language, but I'm going to guess Record. WN Record says, it's nutty how many companies are doing record business and still laying off. Well, that's CEO salaries.
It has to do a lot with their projections and, you know, taking into account things like inflation, operating costs, ongoing projects. You can bring in a current higher profit, but if it's not going to accommodate your projection or your expected operating costs in the next, you know, quarter or next year, then it actually makes perfect sense why they would try to take preventative measures to preserve their income rate. But you're also right. It does go back to the CEOs and whatnot.
Maximum wage laws.
I also agree with Fixie. That, quote, these kinds of layoffs during a global recession should be negligence. Absolutely. And I mean, you want to look at like what a good example is. Look at what Iwata did.
Yes.
When Nintendo took their big dip, he took a pay cut. And you know what? I think that should be the rule for a CEO. You know, if your company is fucking up and you are the leader of said company, you take the hit, not your employees. People only think about themselves. Greed begets greed is what I think. The more you have, the more you want, and you think someone's going to try to take it out of your hand. But guess what? You don't need as much money as you're making to live. You don't.
And that is...
You don't.
Oh, go ahead.
The money that these people make, they can put it into a money market or a CD or something and live very comfortably and very extravagantly off of the interest. Yeah. And that's the problem that we're having right there. All these fuckers need to get taxed. But that's another story.
But that is why the gamers really respected Iwata and miss him greatly. He was one of the greats. So
may his memory be a blessing.
Mm. In other Twitch news, we actually kind of have a companion article to this of some sort. Loki?
Yeah, so of course, you know, Twitch is saying that right now it's the best place for creators to stream and make money, apparently. I mean, sure, yeah, they're going to say that. I mean, why wouldn't they say that? They're always going to say that. But apparently, talking with The Verge, you know, Tom Varelli said that I don't think there's ever been a better time to start streaming on Twitch. We've talked a lot about how we're in this together and we're part of this innovation. We're committed to continuing to improve our monetization products and building new monetization products. At the end of the day, we are committed to increasing the amount of money streamers can earn. Are you though? I mean, because like you just like reduced your split of, you know, revenue from 70-30 down to like, you know, 50-50 for everybody. And then on top of that, like you have these new apparently ad incentive programs that you provide to certain affiliates, I guess, that if you run a certain number of ads in an hour, a ridiculous number of ads, then they'll pay you like extra money, but it's not even really that much money on top of it. Not to mention that if you're running that many ads, you're probably going to lose engagement anyways. One of the other things, too, on top of that, is that their ads program that they have right now, if you run less than 3 minutes of ads in an hour, you're actually only making 30% of the revenue from that, not even the 50. You have to run, I think, over 3 minutes of ads per hour to get that full 50 to 55 amount from them.
I didn't even know they changed that.
So
it's been like that for a while.
Yeah. So it's just, it's not really, I think they're going to have to try a lot harder other than, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, no company's going to come out and go, yeah, we're just like terrible. Like maybe you shouldn't use our service. Like, of course they're going to say that they're the best place because they're going to do that. I mean, what other choices do you have? You have YouTube and then there's the other startup that just,
Kick.
Yeah,
this is what you're thinking of.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm laughing because I just went on there this weekend just to claim my name, you know, just in case, because you never know. But I was just kind of poking around and it definitely like it just feels like a we want to be Twitch type of play. And like I'm looking at the content that's being featured and I'm just like, none of this looks like something I'd enjoy. Sorry, I'm just telling it like it is. Like it's just I wasn't seeing a lot of like compelling content from what I was seeing there on the screen. It looks like a lot of people who just want to be the next mega bucks streamer and playing those types of games or gambling simulators or whatever it is. Like I looked at the website and I was bored. That was my quick review of Kick. Sorry, but that's what I mean. And you know what? It's still young. It's in its infancy. May it grow into something bigger? Possibly. Could I be eating crow later on? Who knows? I'm just saying how I feel today and what I saw on that site when I went today. But we'll see. So
yeah.
But it does seem like Twitch runs mainly unopposed. So I guess there's YouTube. I guess you could count Kick, but I don't think you can until they have a mobile app, which apparently is coming very soon. But you know, until that day, none of these and there's been every year there's some new up and comer that wants to take on Twitch. Unless you have a mobile app and you have some more integration on other devices than just PC screens, you can't be taken seriously. Period. So anybody that wants to take on something has to be able to at least bare minimum have a mobile app to do that.
Exactly, especially in this day and age.
Seriously. an interesting perspective from Fixation Gaze here in chat, who says, just to add something to the best place for creators, a year ago I had my own experiment. When I included the autistic tag on my streams, I was less likely to end up recommended by about 75%. It's only the best for certain creators who start the game famous. Plus, most creators rely on subs to survive over ads. Oh, definitely. Ads make literal pennies. I'm not, you know, even though I'm like, oh, they changed it like years ago and I wasn't paying attention, I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's pennies. If I don't have thousands of viewers, it's not going to matter. But that's very interesting about the tags, because something I do notice Twitch added just in the past couple months was that you can see how your tags perform. And I am a little bit surprised. Well, I'm not totally surprised, but a little surprised at which ones perform a lot stronger than others. And I think that was interesting. I don't know how to see how you're getting recommended, though. That's interesting. So, All right. Well, let's move on. We have more news to cover. So let's talk about some news from Atari and a game that I remember Darksoccer talking about on this show not a terribly long time ago in our Classic Game of the Week segment. And that was the game System Shock, because System Shock has a remake that they've been working on for a while. And we still don't know exactly when it's coming out. But the publisher, Prime Matter, apparently is actually going to be getting picked up by Atari, although the story I linked here has to do with that we do have a date of May 30th for that actual release. This has been in development since 2015, and it was originally supposed to come in the summer of 2021. And this, of course, is a remake of the 1994 first person RPG that's going to be coming for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. But Atari is also purchasing Night Dive Studios, and they're buying it for $10 million in cash. And this is supposed to help Atari expand their catalog, and using technology and boosting a retro-focused strategy. Although a lot of those recent retro releases out of Atari have not been bad. So, you know, I don't mind if they're kind of continuing to lean into that, because a lot of the recent re-releases really haven't been bad. But as we know, I mean, and certainly it's better than some of the other stuff Atari's gotten into recently, like crypto, online casinos, and they're bringing up themed hotels here. We never did see the hotel. Let's give that one a chance first. I thought that sounded interesting, but no hotel as of yet anyway. So anyway, Night Dive should be helping them to bolster their actual game library a little bit with things that aren't necessarily just the retro stuff. So, all right, moving on, Darksoccer.
Couldn't get my button hit fast enough. So there's a comic that I was super into, so excited about when it came out, which was I have been reading the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles more recent issues, which I super love. But there was a series that came out called The Last Ronin, which is about this sort of super futuristic New York area, and of the four turtles, only one of them survived. And you don't find out who it is until the end of the issue. But they are working on a game based on it. It is a really good series, but it is dark. It was published in 2020. It was a 5-issue miniseries by IDW. So at any rate, the game is going to play something, they're actually, working with Paramount. But it's going to be a little bit more adult themed, a little bit, you know, darker, grittier. And it's supposed to play, as they've outlined it, a little bit more like God of War. You know, very mature. They don't have a developer yet, and they think it's going to be at least a few years out from any, you know, sort of release date. But I think it's pretty, I would play the hell out of it. I really liked it.
I have to admit, I didn't know a lot about it until I saw the story. Because, you know, anything Ninja Turtle related, Tiger Claw posts in our Discord. So that's how I saw it. And I was kind of like looking at it going, oh, that's interesting. I didn't
like
even know.
Like a new movie.
I didn't even
the
know that was a thing.
Good.
Yeah?
Wait, new movie?
Yeah, there's a new animated movie that's coming out. Oh. The animation style looks sort of like the, not exactly, but kind of like the Enter the Spider-Verse stuff. Like it's that karmic. A comic panel style. It looks really nice. Like it, I think it's gonna be cool.
Well, but anyway, the big thing that I'm looking forward to is seeing how the different weapons are incorporated, because the survivor carries the weapons of all four of them. And on top of that, in the comic, he would hear sort of, I guess, like the voices of his brothers and talk to them. So I'm wondering if maybe hearing those different voices in gameplay might, you know, access like talk to the voice of this one to get insight on this might give you different pointers and clues throughout the game. I think that would be cool.
All right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And if you want to join our Discord to talk about, you know, Ninja Turtles or other things throughout the weeks, we get a lot of neat news posted in the Orange Dawn's radio channel and some of our other channels as well. Head on over to our Discord over at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/Discord. All right. This next story is something else, Loki.
Yeah, it's unique, that's for sure. So apparently, there is a game that's been made by MSCHF, which is a Brooklyn-based art company, that is called Tax Heaven 3000. It is a dating sim that helps you do your taxes. It's interesting, for sure. So it will actually help you walk through, you know, the process of filing a 1040 U.S. tax return. The problem is, though, it's been delisted off of the websites that it's been on, probably because it asks for your social security number, which, yes, that is part of the tax process, is providing that information. However, would I trust the game to do that? Questionable. It doesn't appear that the game is supposed to connect to the internet, but still kind of fishy. So it has been removed from Steam, and I think the download is not available anymore for itch.io either. But it looks silly, and, you know, it does allow you to actually file your taxes. But, you know, to be fair, I mean, tax season is right now, and I mean, there's lots of free websites that you can do it through that are way more reputable and probably a lot more easier to actually file your taxes. But it's still a novel idea.
It's interesting because I heard this story at first and I kind of laughed at it and I went, LOL, of course there's something like this. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, is this really so bad? Like,
it's not. I think
this is more respectable than some of the things these companies try to pull over. And some of these websites that have you do your taxes that bombard you with spam. Oh, it looks like you forgot to finish your taxes, or trying to upsell all this other stuff and all this other crap. Like there's a part of me that kind of looks at this and goes, in a weird way, this is it's either satire and it's really good satire, or it's a really interesting way to try to get a hold of a market that otherwise doesn't usually think about a fun way to kind of do this stuff.
Well, yeah, taxes are a slog a lot of times, so it's an interesting idea. If there was some way to, like, they could have, like, an independent security firm or something like that, take a look at it, make sure, like, okay, hey, we're certifying that this isn't going to send your social security number and personal information out on the internet, then, yeah, sure, you know, why not? Let's roll with it. But, like, I think that's just where people are a little weary because, like, you know, you don't know who these developers are. I mean, obviously, this company has worked with, like, big names like Lil Nas X and stuff on other projects, so they're somewhat reputable, but, like, you know, you can never tell, like, who's developing your games and stuff like that. You don't know. You wouldn't want to trust them with that kind of information because leaks happen all the time. So that's the only thing I think people are a little bit wary on, and obviously that's probably why it's been delisted off of there. But, like, security aside, if it were completely secure, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think it's cool.
Well, this is, so fixation gaze has a comment in chat here, and then I think it kind of leans into what you're talking about, where you're going with this. Fixation gaze says TurboTax makes it racing themed. I'd rather date a cute girl. And Dark Soccer, I saw you said same. And I and that's the thing, is that I can't help but feel like, who's the company behind TurboTax? Intuit, I think is the name of them. I can't help but feel like come tax season 2024, or I guess it would be tax season 2023 in 2024. You know what I mean? I can't help but feel like Intuit is going to see what's going on here. And they're going to, I'm not saying they're going to have a anime thing, but they're going to be like, ooh, what if we did like a video game, more immersive type of approach, and hire like an outsourced developer to do some type of thing and like put it together and do that whole thing and have it through that. I have to, and fixation gaze, I understand you're saying, God, I hope so. KFC did a love sim and it was popular as hell. In a way, yes, but I actually have to say, if Intuit was allowed to do that now, I'd actually be kind of pissed off that this got shut down. Now, granted, it is the fault of the company that put this together to not think about those security motions in place and da 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 da. But I would be more irritated at the fact that the big company took the little company's idea because they had a legal department to make it better, make it more functional, if you will. That part of it would kind of piss me off, I think. But I feel like, and thank you. Fixie says, oh, that's so fair. I want them to hire them. Give the small guys money. Much better solution. I like that. But I feel like that's not a company. Like, just sorry. Just based on the behaviors I see in the TurboTax software and all that, I feel like they're going to go to somewhere where they can get it, an outsource in another country and have it developed to be like this and do that whole thing.
Yeah. So apparently,
watch it. Apparently, it's going to be next year's tax season.
So apparently, even though it's been delisted from Steam, so itch.io still has it up. I didn't realize that the game is not actually out yet, so it's coming out April 4th. So if you're still interested, it is on itch.io. You can still get it that way.
How do you ultimately file? Does it e-transmit, or do you like, since, no, or do you print them?
It's basically, it looks like that you... you can either print or download it when you're done. So it basically fills out the form for you, and then you print or download it, and I guess you would e-file that way somehow. I don't know.
I'll be perfectly honest. I don't want my tax thing as a game. I'm sorry. I would rather fill out the form, have it be uninteresting but factual without any fluff, and get my taxes filed and get my money. Taxes don't need to be a game.
I can see pros and cons to both. I love the choice. And to me, this is very similar to traffic school. And how do you, like, you know, obviously we all try to avoid getting a ticket and all that stuff. But if you ever get a ticket, you could go to stand-up comedy traffic school if you want, where the whole thing is, yeah, and I already see you rolling your eyes, Dark Sakura. And that would, honestly, that probably be what I would want to do. But if you want to go to a, for lack of a better term, normal traffic school, that's just, all right, give me the facts. Just don't be funny about it. Just normal
Mine
classroom.
Online,
let's get this over with.
Or and online. I skipped the training and just did the test and was done in 10 minutes.
So, but there's that choice. So I like that would be kind of available. So, and yes, April 15th is typically tax day, although holidays have been fluctuating that day a little bit. Weird calendars. It's around the 15th. So it looks like and April also, 18th this year.
And also this year, there's like things like with the weather and stuff. I think that's possible for certain people to have it delayed until like September even. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, April. So fixation case, April 1st may be the cutoff for TurboTax before the prices go up, because the last 2 weeks before you file your taxes, they're going to jack those prices sky high, because that's what those companies do.
Just don't use TurboTax. Seriously, like, there's websites out there that you can use that are probably way more intuitive. And I think it's like, it's free to e-file your just regular federal, and if you want to do your state, things like $17. It's like, it's so minimal, and I do it every year. Stuff. Yeah, it's just,
yeah. I mean,
so easy.
Our lady who used to help us, she passed away a few years ago. R.I.P. Kathy. But But yeah, she basically walked us through so many different things that we just use the H&R Block software.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, tax tips from Orange Lounge Radio. Bet you didn't know you'd get that this week. All right. Moving on. Let's go to one
if
more.
If you're confused, hire an accountant. The end.
Yeah, that's very true. Disclaimer, we are not accountants. We're just, you know, nerds of the podcast. All right.
I can rock an actuarial table for your mortgage, okay? I used to work for a mortgage company.
All right. Well, here's what you can expect to hear on Orange Lounge Radio every single goddamn Dude. Week for the next 2 years. No, the Activision Blizzard Microsoft deal. What's the latest and greatest?
MST3K? Well, whoopty shit.
Well, some people are saying whoopty shit this week because there was a pretty big hurdle that was actually cleared in all of this, and that is the UK regulators. The UK regulators did announce a provisional finding that the acquisition of Activision Blizzard by Microsoft wouldn't harm competition. So there's not going to be a need, at least in the UK. Again, this has to still clear the US and, you know, other global markets, but that there's no need to spin off Call of Duty and so forth. In a quote, the CMA, Competition and Markets Authority in the UK, said in a quote, "While the CMA's original analysis indicated that the strategy would be profitable under most scenarios, new data, which provides better insight into the actual purchasing behavior of Call of Duty gamers, indicates that this strategy would be significantly loss-making under any plausible scenario. On this basis, meaning if they were to make Call of Duty exclusive to Microsoft, it would actually lose Microsoft money. On this basis, the updated analysis now shows that it would not be commercially beneficial to Microsoft to make Call of Duty exclusive to Xbox following the deal, but that Microsoft will instead still have the incentive to continue making the game available on PlayStation. It all comes down to Call of Duty." Now, CMA is still investigating cloud gaming and Game Pass. No decision on that is expected until 26th April, since we are talking about the UK here. They're still looking at Game Pass, but Call of Duty was sort of viewed to be the biggest sticking point in this entire thing. And now that that's cleared by the UK, this is a huge hurdle cleared for this. And a lot of people that were kind of betting on this, metaphorically, were assuming that the UK was going to put a stop to this and it was going to be over. So the fact that this went through now, and a lot of this too, is kind of Sony's own fault. And so, because Sony admitted that they were just trying to stop this deal, that they really don't have a financial, that's going to be looked at as a defining moment in this whole thing, the way that Sony kind of botched that answer. Although it was also an honest answer. Let's be real. It was the answer. So anyhow, SHO100 Matt says the FTC and whatever members of Congress will make a scene for in a few weeks in the public sphere. But I still think this deal happens. Oh, if that whole stuff with TikTok is any indication, oh boy. But I don't think, I mean, you're not going to see that in this type of thing. I'm being a little bit dramatic. You're not going to see them in front of God. Well, I guess anything could happen, but procedurally, that is not something that should be happening as a part of that. So anyway. All right, let's move on to a simpler time when Congress didn't understand video games at all. Well, actually, that still is the case. But anyway, we're going to just move on to our next segment.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
Who picked the classic game this week? Because is this a secret Loki pick? What's going on here? This looks like a Loki pick.
No, but I thought of Loki when I picked it.
All right, what is the game of the week?
The game of the week is Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Wow.
And yes, it's actually a 21-year-old game. It can drink. Mm.
It's as old as this show, about.
Just about. And I picked it actually for certain reasons. And now I almost went with Grand Theft Auto 3 because Grand Theft Auto 3 was the first one to abandon that sort of overhead view and go on to the third person view. But Vice City had some massive improvements over Grand Theft Auto 3. And while Grand Theft Auto 3 went into creating immersion and a story and everything, I really think the formula was perfected with Vice City. So to go back into this, there were a lot. Well, again, it came out in 2002. An action-adventure game developed by Rockstar North, published by Rockstar Games, and it is the fourth Grand Theft Auto game. The fourth in the series and the sixth installment overall. It is set in 1986, with a pretty freaking amazing soundtrack, just saying, where you are in Vice City, which is based off of Miami and Miami Beach, and you follow a mobster named Tommy, who has been released from jail and is it's his rise to power again, but not necessarily just that, but his, you know, just a statement about the area, about the time, about that world, of course, you know, a little bit more glamorized. But, you know, the great thing about the game that started again with Grand Theft Auto 3 is that it's an open world, you know, it's got real people in it, you know, like it touches on the immigration issues that were going on in Miami and along the Gulf Coast, especially with Cuban, Haitian immigrants, biker gangs, the crack epidemic, the Anna glam metal. We can't forget glam metal, you know, the whole beautiful butt rock back in the day. But the game itself had two major influences, and it was Scarface and Miami Vice. You know, the original Miami Vice, not the remake. Yeah, very, very Scarface. They started off with those sort of blueprints, the universe idea, and then they built their game world to fit that inspiration, that general time field. They had the team spend a lot of time in Miami and looking at landmarks and trying to recreate some of these. And that's been an ongoing theme in a lot of the Grand Theft Auto games. I mean, like, Liberty City is based off New York and has, you know, some recreations of some of those, you know, areas, at least trying to fit those areas, where San Andreas had, like, you know, the Chinese Theater, for example, and other parts of Los Angeles. But going back to this one, this game was actually considered as one of the greatest video games ever made by many, many lists. And it made Game of the Year for a bunch of different publications. It has gotten so many ports. We'll get into that a little bit later. But anyway, as I was saying, it's an action-adventure game. It's played from third person. You play Tommy Vercetti, who has different story objectives that he needs to achieve. And then there's also little side jobs, and there's a free roaming aspect, very open world, and you can just do nothing but explore. You can spend a day just doing whatever you want, like actual people do. And it is composed on these two islands with several small areas within, like, you know, like a neighborhood, you know. The islands unlock more areas as the story progresses. You know, you run, jump, drive. You have melee attacks. You have all kinds of weapons and explosives, such as a Colt Python, an M60 machine gun, a minigun, a sniper rifle, a rocket launcher. You know, because doesn't everyone have, like, a rocket launcher just hanging out in their trunk or something?
Oh, yeah, on the garage.
Yeah. But you actually, you know, can purchase illegal weapons from firearm dealers. You can find them on the ground. That always makes me laugh. You retrieve them, you know, from dead people or just in general area. You have an auto aim feature, and you have your health meter. You can pick up health pickups. You can get body armor, And then, of course, when you, quote, die in-game, you respawn at the hospital, losing your weapons and armor and some of your money. And then, of course, you, SSJ 100 Matt says, I mean, it is Florida. But you also can commit crimes, and it builds up your wanted meter on your HUD. And so it increases the more crimes you commit. And so your wanted meter, if you're encountered, like, say, by police, you have to drive around or turn off or hide to get them off of your ass. So, like, there's all kinds of other, like, interesting little mini games in there, like vigilantism, firefighting, paramedics, driving a taxi. You can buy businesses like a porn studio and a taxi company. You can own clubs, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And then, you know, and I'm not going to get too much into the story. If you really, you know, if you haven't already played it and you care about it, there's videos. But the particular game was started when GTA 3 was finishing its completion. You know, just early development, like 3D models, really just getting that off the ground. And then they were talking about, like, making a mission pack for GTA 3. And then instead of that, as they were going through it, they decided to make a GTA 4. The game was announced on May 22nd, 2002 at E3. And it was, at the time, Rockstar's North most expensive game. The budget exceeded $5 million. And then they had to postpone it a little bit. And then it's had, like, a number of various releases. It was released for PlayStation 2 on October 29th in North America, November 8th in Europe. This is in 2002. Capcom published the game in Japan on May 20th, 2004 for PS2 and Windows. And it was added to the Rockstar Games Launcher in September 2019. Now, I'll be honest, it's not my kind of game. I don't enjoy the themes of the game. However, I fucking love watching people play it, because I like seeing how in-depth the universe that these people live in, how in-depth and involved it is. It's like, you know, me watching a movie. The movie could be utter shit with the worst actors ever, but if it has an engaging universe, I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I'm not going to name any other examples on there, but it really, you can even see it if you look at the cover of the game, that major Miami Vice with the pastels and the neons, just that whole, I mean, sort of like how the retro new wave thing started coming back up a few years ago. Very much, you know, makes me think of that. So how well did it do? Want to make a guess? Damn well.
It printed money.
Metacritic calculated an average score of 95 out of 100. That's pretty damn good. It is the fifth highest rated PS2 game overall. Tied with a few others, but, you know, overall. A lot of the criticism for the game had more to do with the controls and a few technical issues than anything else in the game. It was considered to be one of the most impressive games. And this is my favorite description of it from GameSpy's Raymond Padilla. Deep, devilishly enjoyable, and unique. Devilishly enjoyable. I'm going to steal that one day. But let's go over just, like, what some of the other ratings were. Allgame gave it a 5 out of 5. Eurogamer 10 out of 10, Game Informer 10 out of 10, Game Revolution A, GameSpot 9.6 out of 10, GameSpy 95 out of 100, IGN 9.7 out of 10. So, I mean, really, really amazing. And it got a vehicle to ride that the last game didn't have. You could ride around on a motorcycle. You get your own road rash on. But it's just the Windows version, even, that came out to in May 2003, and it was also highly acclaimed with its scores rivaling maybe just under the console version. It got really a lot of kudos for its improvement in the rendering, like improved draw distance and fewer texture issues, and actually having very reasonable requirements. So Vice City was also released on mobile devices December 2012. It was mostly favorable. You know, a lot of the problems with it had actually enhanced visuals, but the problems with it were the touchscreen controls. It was pretty well received overall. But yeah, the game has made so much money, and honestly, people are still all about it. But then, there were a few controversies, because you can't have a GTA game without, you know,
controversies in Grand Theft Auto.
No, and the other reason I picked this one is I didn't want to deal with the fucking hot coffee thing. But anyway, part of, you know, people, of course, there was the violence issue, the objectification, a lot of the ethnic stereotypes, you know, just like, you know, showing that people immigrated from a certain place were, you know, drug dealers or thugs or whatever. You know, and of course, it was a mature game in Australia. It was actually edited a lot to get an MA-15 plus classification. And then there was later on an uncensored version that came out over there that kept its classification. There was a $600 million lawsuit against Cody Posey, Rockstar Games, Take-Two Interactive, and Sony, claiming that 14-year-old Cody Posey played the game obsessively before murdering his father, stepmother, and stepsister at a ranch in Hondo, New Mexico. And they were also, though, blaming Zoloft. Just, I take that. I haven't killed anybody that I'll talk about. I'm kidding. Haven't done it at all. But the case was dismissed in 2007 as New Mexico had no jurisdiction for Sony or Take-Two. There were other cases out there, as in Jack Thompson.
Not that.
We were supposed to mention that name again, but it's been a few years.
I feel like it's been a decade. He slid into obscurity some time ago, and rightfully so.
Yeah, but he brought up a lawsuit about an 18-year-old named Devin Moore, who killed two Alabama police officers and a dispatcher before fleeing in a patrol car and was apprehended. And he was quoted saying, "Life is like a video game. Everyone's got to die sometime." But Thompson removed himself from the case, actually from a couple of cases that he had been involved in, because of his unprofessional conduct. The Supreme Court rejected an appeal and they dismissed the case. Or no, rejected the appeal by the defendants to dismiss the case. Moving on, the Psychic Readers Network and they sued Rockstar over a character named Auntie Polley, which, doesn't that mean chicken, Polley? Anyway, saying that the characters between her and Yuri Harris, who voiced the character, that it was copyright infringement, but it was really just parody. So, its legacy has been pretty intense. You know, it's definitely raised the bar for video games since then. Oh gosh, yeah, I think he was disbarred a while ago. I don't know. I didn't care enough about the loser to look into what happened to him. But it has had so many releases. So, for all the ports, after the PS2 version, there was a Windows version. There was a GameCube version that was planned but canceled. It was bundled with Grand Theft Auto 3 in a compilation titled Grand Theft Auto Double Pack on Xbox. The Xbox version also had a custom soundtrack and improved audio, models, reflections. The double pack was also bundled with San Andreas compilation called Grand Theft Auto The Trilogy. The trilogy was also released for Mac OS X, November 12, 2010. It's OS X, not OS X, people. It's X is a Roman numeral. It was also released on iOS and Android, following more of the Windows version of the game, but had enhanced visuals and a customized layout. There was also a Fire OS version. An emulated version of Vice City was playable on PS3. That was with the PlayStation Network's PS2 Classics. Another emulated version for PS4, upscaled to 1080p with PlayStation trophies. There is a remastered version called the Definitive Edition that was released on Windows, Switch, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series, X/S. More versions for Android and iOS in development. Another group reverse engineered the game and released it as an executable in 2020. And it was called ReVC, that lets you put it on Switch, Vita, Wii U. Take-Two issued a DMCA takedown on the project. But there's a lot more about just where it stands in legalities. You know, there are people have been trying to reverse engineer it and put it everywhere, and Take-Two's like, no. Bad people, no. But that's it. I know there's a lot to cover on that one, and I glossed over a bunch. If you're interested, though, there's a really good, I'd have to find it again, but there's a really good documentary about the entire evolution of the Grand Theft Auto series, down to every new version in the platform that it was on. And I highly recommend watching it if you're really interested in it. Boz, there was no code for hot coffee. And it wasn't even in this game, which is why I didn't do the game that the hot coffee was in.
Because as part of this, which a great pick for classic game of the week, obviously had to be done eventually. Because it got brought up, I also was legitimately curious. Whatever happened to that bitch? So I went to the wiki for Jack Thompson to see whatever happened to that bitch. And yes, you all are right. He was disbarred. We covered that a million times over. It's interesting because it talks about his activities through about 2008, 2009, and then there's nothing but a single sentence. And again, it's wiki. So, you know, whatever, anybody could have written it. But in an April 2016 interview with Inverse, which is an online magazine, Thompson stated he was teaching civics classes to inmates in the Florida prison system, including an American history and constitutional law class at the Everglades Correctional Institution. So,
as a fellow inmate, or
no.
Aw.
So,
oh my God, did you see the section about Janet Reno?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to read everything.
I have to. This is great.
Okay.
He met Janet Reno in 1975, applied for a job, but was not hired. He had sent her a letter to have her check a box to indicate whether she was homosexual, bisexual, or heterosexual. And then she put a hand on his shoulder and responded, "I'm only interested in virile men. That's why I'm not attracted to you."
I miss Janet Reno. The thing I miss about Janet Reno most was that when Will Ferrell would parody her on Saturday Night Live with the dance parties, not only was that whole thing really funny, but she came on and did one, and they had a laugh together. Like, she was very like self-deprecating in that way, and you know, it's great.
And for anyone who only knows him about this, he was also the one responsible for the lawsuit against NWA, Two Live Crew, all of that going on.
Oh, that's how he got famous. I'm using my quotey fingers in the first place. Yeah,
he went around a bunch of rap. He went after a bunch of rap groups. He went after Ice-T for that rather famous song of his and Madonna. So yeah, whatever.
Anyway, all right. Well, there's your update on that one. All right, moving on. Let's talk.
Recipient of the sickest of sick burns from Janet Reno.
Let us not speak of his name again for another 7 years. All right, moving on. Let's talk about some other things going on in the gaming industry, but we can do it quickly. Loki, rapid fire news.
Yeah, as we talked about last week, there was a game that leaked out, and now there's the official announcement. So it's Lego 2K Drive. It is an open world racing game. Kind of think of, it almost reminded me a little bit of Forza, but obviously not. But it is a Lego game, and you drive and race around. Unfortunately, it is a 2K game, and with that, there are season passes, there are in-game currencies, there are monetizations, and there are $70 price tags, assuming you buy the base game, in which case then also it could be upwards to $99 or even more than that for the game. So that's probably a pass for me, even though it does look cool, but like, nah. And then, of course, you know, continuing on with their serial domination, Minecraft is doing yet another serial. This time, they are doing Minecraft-flavored Frosted Flakes, I guess. It basically has marshmallows in it, and they're square marshmallows. It's better than their first cereal.
Ruin cereals by putting in gross marshmallows.
I mean, yeah. Well, their original Minecraft cereal that they have, and my kids have had, it was like cinnamon cereal, but like not cinnamon sugar. It's like cinnamon with marshmallows. So I'll take Frosted Flakes with marshmallows over cinnamon with marshmallows. I don't know why they keep doing cinnamon. Like, stop doing cinnamon.
I also cannot stand the concept of marshmallows and cereal because I don't. Okay, because I'm the weirdo. I don't like my cereal in milk. I like to just eat cereal. But the marshmallows that they put in cereal is meant to be put in milk to actually become full marshmallow.
But there's. Gross anyway. Yeah, marshmallows are just gross, but these are the gross of the gross.
Yeah,
but they're like the licorice of marshmallows.
I love the dehydrated marshmallows. I love Lucky Charms because like you chew into the marshmallow, it's kind of like chewing on an eraser. It's just great. I love it.
Even
it's
reason.
So good.
And now keep in mind, I was the kid that liked grape nuts.
Yeah, I'm like, I like
oat bran.
I like frosted mini wheats. That's
my favorite.
You know what my cereal.
And my downfall.
So like, I'm on both sides of the spectrum with cereals there. So like, it's either like Captain Crunch or Total.
I love Total.
See, here's the thing: a diabetes diagnosis will change your perspective on cereal significantly. There's an interesting brand. I'm not going to name it because they pay a lot of money for advertising on social media, but they're not paying me.
Yeah, I already know what you're talking
about. There is a brand that is trying to make low carb cereal, and they actually sell it at Target now. And I've had it, and it's okay.
Heard of it?
But it's all about portion. You haven't heard of it?
No.
Okay, I'll text you.
I have Turbo. I don't watch ads.
You don't read Facebook. It's Facebook ads. So,
yeah, Facebook. Yeah. Facebook. I've completely divorced myself from the entire Facebook universe.
Jealous. But
hey, it's easy. Just don't do it.
Yeah. So there's a very popular brand. Yes, Deft said it in chat. That's as much as I'll give you for the podcast. Right, for the podcast. All right. But it's okay. But you can kind of tell that you're eating something that's like, I can't believe it's not cereal. Like it's the margarine of cereals. It really is.
Yeah. All right. And Bobby, just as an FYI, the rest of my family is on Facebook. I'm still not going on there. If they want to talk to me, they can message me.
Family who talks to them. All right, I'm just kidding. I talk to my dad as much as I can. All right, moving on. Let's move on. And we still have, actually, I'm sorry, some stories here. Let's go to Dark Sakura. Oh, this is another interesting collaboration. I love this.
Yeah, and I kind of don't know what to think, except I need to just like go buy a bunch of this and then have a place that has an accessible bathtub. But they are selling, Lush has a collaboration with the Super Mario Brothers movie, and they have a series of bath soaps to, quote, power up your bathing. There's a cola-scented Mario shower gel, apple for Luigi, a warm and spicy Bowser shower jelly, and a peach shower jelly. So, yay. But the thing that I care about is the question block bath bomb. And I am going to quote the article here because they did miss a freaking opportunity. They should have called it a bath bomb.
Oh, they should have called it a bath bomb. I love that.
But at any rate, you drop the question block into your bath and you get a super power toy.
A coin.
So you could get a fire flower or, you know, a star or, you know, one up or something. And like, I'm not going to lie, I got some of the Hello Kitty ones for the same thing. So I would do this. It just depends on what it smells like. I am like ridiculously sensitive to some smells. I like Lush, but I get like, I kind of feel high when I'm in there too long, like overstimulated.
It is an overpowering. Yeah.
And also I still have the same, chocolate lotion bar that I bought 5 years ago. I've almost used it up, but I still have it.
I actually, it's one of those things where it's like, I love me a bubble bath. I do, especially now that Alan and I have a house with a tub that lends itself to being able to do that. Like I'm going to have to go to Lush. And that's one of those places where you walk in there and those hounds that work there that will upsell you. They're so, so good at that stuff. Like I'll go into Lush and like $100 later, I'll be like, why did I buy all this shit? But anyway, but I do love me a bubble bath. So, all right. Moving on. Let's talk about,
body washes soap.
Yeah.
Just saying to her tiger claw. It doesn't. Yeah.
I don't even know. What did Lush pull on YouTube? I didn't know about a thing like that.
I didn't know about something that they did on YouTube, so.
Well, let me read this while I wait for elaboration on that. Let's talk about the Bloodstained Curse of the Moon Chronicles. There is a physical Switch bundle that is being announced for Japan, and that is going to come out with an art book, a two-disc soundtrack CD, and an acrylic keychain. It's being released on July 13th for $41.80. I'm sorry, the regular edition is 4,180 yen. The premium limited edition, 9,980 yen for that. And again, this is for Bloodstained Curse of the Moon, which basically, if you're a Castlevania fan, this is all you have now. So some people may be interested in that. Alrighty. Fixation Gaze says Lush bought a URL that a small creator was using and YouTube basically let them steal it. Oh, you know, we had brought up that site Kick earlier, and I heard a similar thing happened over there, which is not a good look for them. And that was actually the whole thing that made me go think, oh, I should go stake claim to my name over there now. Not that it's going to matter, but I don't think there's
Why do you think I have never let go of darksakurai.com?
Oh, I don't blame you. I don't think there's a lot of people using the name Rob Roberts, but I know there's a politician in the UK who's apparently an arsehole from what I understand. I don't know much about him, but apparently there's a politician over there who's got a lot of troubles.
I share my stage name with a porn star.
Well, and the bionic woman, for God's sake.
No. I spell mine differently than the Bionic Woman, remember?
Right. No, okay. Oh, you mean down to the spelling.
Yeah, down to the spelling, because the Bionic Woman is J-A-I-M-E-S-O-M-M-E-R-S, and mine is J-A-M-I-E, and I get pissed off when people misspell my name out here. I'm looking at you, everybody, ever at Starbucks. And S-U-M-M-E-R-S, so yeah. Although, Rob, you remember this, Jessica's ex?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had the same name?
Mm-hmm.
Down to last name?
Mm-hmm.
And we got each other's mail? And I still got his mail years after they were broken up until I got married.
Yeah.
Not saying what my old name was.
Of course not.
The concept of a maiden name is disgusting.
All right. Let's move on and check out some releases, things that will be coming out a little sooner than the Curse of the Moon Chronicles bundle. World release date starting in the U.S., Loki.
Yeah, we have 9 Years of Shadows on PC. And let's see, Crime Boss, Rock Hay City. That's awesome. Can't wait to play that. That'll be coming out this week as well. Last of Us Part 1 on PC. MLB The Show 23 on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Sifu on Xbox One and Xbox Series. Dredge on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. The Great War Western Front on PC. Ravenbound on PC. Saga of Sins on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Blade Assault on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. That is it.
All right. Going over to Japan on the 30th of March on the Nintendo Switch, we have Serial Cleaners is coming out. Is this a game what I think it is? Oh, no. I literally thought this was going to be a game about cleaning, like Power Wash Simulator, but like next level, like for people who just can't get enough, never be clean. I thought it would be that, but
speaking of Serial Mom.
No, sadly, it is nothing like that. It is about it says straight out of 90s, but it's getting rid of bodies, making the place spotless, and don't get caught. You alternate between four characters with a unique skill set, and it's set in the era of 90s cult movies. So I guess that is interesting. You're cleaning up crime scenes. I guess that is kind of an interesting concept for a game. So that is out on the Switch this week. Also, Tales of the Neon Sea, also out this week. Winning Post 10. That's right. Winning Post series. It's still going. And Koei Tecmo is putting out the 10th version in Japan this week. That is all on the Switch. Also in Japan on the PlayStation 5 this week, The Chant. As well as Tales of the Neon Sea, Winning Post 10, not skipping the PlayStation, so it's out there as well. Let's move over to the UK, Dark Sakura.
A bare handful. On the 28th on Switch, we have Session Skate Sim. All of these are on the 30th. Also on Switch, we have Ravensburger Memory. Dredge. For PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, not to be confused with The Dredge, most annoying killer ever. Well, one of them. And then also on the 30th, we have Sifu, Vengeance Edition for Xbox.
All right.
That's it.
We have a few more stories for you. And then we have the mailbag, as well as your calls, if we have any tonight. VogNetwork.com, that's VOGNetwork.com/Discord is how to join our Discord server. Let's move on. We have some more stories, so let's go over to Loki.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. The news that Ubisoft is going to use AI to help them write dialogue. That's great.
We know how that goes.
Can the AI help them make better games that aren't all derivatives of Far Cry?
The AI can run companies more effectively, it turns out.
Anyway, so yeah, they've developed a tool called Ghostwriter. It says, introducing Ubisoft Ghostwriter, an AI tool developed in-house that aims to support our scriptwriters by generating the first draft of our NPC barks and phrases or sounds made by NPCs when players interact with them in the game world. It says the tool was created hand-in-hand with scriptwriters to create more realistic NPC interactions by generating variations on pieces of dialogue. And, yeah, neat, I guess. I don't know. Like, Ubisoft, of all companies, you know, really hearing that some of the work is being tasked to AI, like, I feel that, like, their games already feel like they're generated by AI. Like, let alone, you know, actually using AI for stuff. I understand that this is kind of, you know, to save some time, but not a great look. Can the AI solve the problem of, you know, the rampant sexual harassment that's going on in the company? Can Ghostwriter take care of that too?
As I said earlier in the show, the AI can make a better CEO for the company than Bobby Kotick. Let me actually. So while you were saying that, I actually just threw this into the Google Bard thingy thing. So let me show that. And by the way, why is it now? It didn't used to do this, but when I try to set up B-roll on my other monitor, it makes your guys' squares gray. It didn't used to do that. I have to figure out what's going on behind the scenes. So sorry about that. But I said, okay, make up a new killer for the game Dead by Daylight. And it says, here's a new killer. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it came up with a killer called the Puppeteer. The Puppeteer can control the movements of other survivors by using a special puppet. The puppet can be used to attack survivors, block them from escape routes, or even force them to self-sabotage. Okay, this all sounds fine and good.
So what, Dollmaster from VHS?
This clearly was stolen from a fan thing or another game even, like you're suggesting, from somewhere, right? That's the whole thing where like this
Orange, right? We already have the pig.
This AI thing is kind of going, right? And Fixation Gaze says, yeah, that's someone's idea, right? And I realize the usage of the term AI is a little bit nuanced. I'm using that here because that is what the industry and most, you know, commentators are saying right now. I realize, you know, some may say this is like machine learning, or this is just really, let me Google that for you to the next level, because it's using a lot of predictive stuff to do this. But my point is, a lot of what just came up in that little thing about make up a new killer, that was stolen from somewhere. I guarantee it.
Yeah, from Reddit, because I just searched Dead by Daylight Puppeteer, and there's someone that
there
this big old thing.
An AI cannot create its own answer without having learned it from other sources. That is the essence of machine learning.
Exactly.
So, I've taken a few courses on machine learning lately. For anyone who's saying, oh, it's going to be able to make these logical decisions and everything, all of its decisions are going to be based by the input of whatever goes into its database.
I mean, some of the stuff that they've seen, and not necessarily
this
with Bard,
isn't Detroit, y'all.
But like GPT-4 or whatever, they've been doing Hustle GPT, where they basically feed in like, okay, hey, you have $100 to spend. You know, we're going to start a business that's going to make as much money as possible. You tell me what to do and I'll do it. And then it'll basically walk you through the whole process of doing everything.
I'm going to see.
People are actually making money with it, too.
I did this earlier and I got an answer and I have to share it here because you guys will get a kick out of this. Okay, here we go. So I asked Bard, what is the longest running video game podcast? And it told me the longest running video game podcast is another show, which has been running since 2002. It's a weekly radio show that is broadcast live on the internet and is also available as a podcast. This particular show also started on the radio somewhere. I'm not sure that's the year they actually started. I have to go look it up or whatever. But if you didn't know, this show has been running since June 23rd, 2002, and we're pretty confident we're the longest running video game podcast, weekly, uninterrupted at this point. If this had come up and said Gamertag Radio,
for Star Trek Cruises?
Was that?
Except for Star Trek.
Well, yeah, uninterrupted. Yeah, no. Every show gets, you know, yeah. People take Christmas and New Year's off. Anyway, if this had come up and said Gamertag Radio, at least I would have understood that one, because, you know, he puts out multiple episodes a week and he crossed 1,000 episodes some time ago. So I would have at least kind of got, like, it's kind of your perception of what is longest
he
mean.
He started in 2006.
We are the longest chronologically running.
So it's not even correct on the year that they started, which, no disrespect to this show. They work very hard. This is not about us versus them. This is just about, we're very proud of the long legacy that this show has created and the fact that people still don't know about it. And like, you know, we're somehow that cool indie band 21 years after the fact. We're very proud of that. And so I get irritated because actually, if you go in and you look at some of the, one of them, like one of the suggestions even said they're the Guinness World Record holder. And that's when I went, hold up. But I actually couldn't find anything to source that. Yeah, Bard made that shit up.
I tried to apply. And
I do. That's why I went, hold the fuck up. That's exactly why I did that.
Right. We have to apply as a company, by the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you search for One Life Left, it says.
I was trying not to do a call out post, Loki.
I don't care. Whatever.
They did in our chat too.
They even say it's the world's longest running video game podcast, which is false.
So
there's other
I want to be clear because I don't want a silly war starting because we're all in it together. We're all podcasties. This is not an us versus them thing. This is just an AI doesn't get the facts right because it can't be nuanced enough sometimes. So it's what it is. So anyway, so the whole NPC dialogue and my point I was trying to make was that sure it can. And I realize they're not going to be using literally Google Bard or ChatGPT or whatever, but whatever it is they're using, you know, I guess if it trains off of Ubisoft games, then whatever. But it's all going to sound like a copy of something else. Now, granted, some of you feel that video game quest text is already at that point.
Oh, Rob.
What's that?
I'm sorry. I'm not meaning to set this off, but there's something that went back to a very earlier thing that we talked about.
Okay.
On the homepage of Twitch. Now, I think this is on the German page anyway. There is a Luna link right at the top of the page.
They have Luna at the bar on the top, but that's like throwing a link is literally the most minimal thing they could do. You know what I mean?
Never noticed it.
Yeah, and actually, yes, that says quite enough right there. You've never noticed it.
I don't go to the homepage. Yeah. I just go to my follower page.
Fair. Interesting. I do go to the homepage, but then I instantly click things on the left. So I guess I never think to go to my followers page directly. It's interesting. Anyway. All right, let's move on. We still have a few more stories. Dark Sakura.
So Silent Hill 2 remake. It is near completion, according to the Bloober team. They don't have a launch date yet, but they are revealing that it will be, quote, sooner rather than later. According to a Polish outlet called Bankier, they said the game is technically ready, but it's not complete. It's close to completion, and that the release schedule and promotional marketing is actually going out by Konami themselves. So that's out of their hands. I'm pretty excited. They also are saying that the nurse enemies now have black stockings. And according to Ito, the art director, it was because the original nurses exposed too much skin. But a lot of the fans are saying that this goes more with James Sunderland's psychosexual mental state. So, But you can already wishlist it on Steam, so I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I wonder if whatever is coming for E3, which, by the way, not to get too much on a tangent, but I'm going to, because I was ready to come on the show and be like, so, hey, folks, we're like less than 3 months from E3. What the fuck is happening? Apparently E3 registration did open up at some point to like meet, and they are supposedly targeting podcasters. I almost wanted to apply just for the lols. Like, I have no intention on going just because I don't have the time off to do it. Really. I mean, I do, but I don't. I almost want to apply for those, but if one of you want to apply, go for it. I don't care. But yeah, I guess.
Does it mean I have to do like another writing sample?
Jamie
like
just said everything with her face. No, the application is completely different now. So they've changed that. So for better or for worse, we'll see.
When is it again?
Middle of June. I know that's so descriptive. I'm sorry. Like maybe.
Well, no, because I took the week off for my birthday. I'm going to TwitchCon, so.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, no, your birthday is way too early and TwitchCon's too late. Yeah. It's middle June somewhere.
So I'm not going to be able to swing it.
Yeah.
I would have done it just for shits and then go to Disneyland.
Yeah, I got to admit, I'm still a little bit tempted. But anyway, long story, but I have not seen E3 open up to general public. Now, I guess I should go to the website because I would hate to sit here and, you know, if I'm going to be critical, I want to be accurate. OK, so I guess I could look here live on air, but I don't think the general registration is still open. I think industry and media and that whole thing is open, but not the general population is still not open. But folks, it is less than 3 months from E3. If you want to get a flight to Los Angeles, 90 days is the sweet spot to do it. There it is. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bobby. I knew somebody in chat. Not open yet. Gamer registration page says coming soon.
Sure.
Is it, though?
Shit about E3 anymore. It is not relevant.
I know.
End of story.
I know, but I just, when the press release finally comes out that says, oh, we had to cancel E3, I just want to be able to say, mm-hmm.
I would go to see if I can get a Sega t-shirt. And then go to Disneyland in my Sega t-shirt.
I would go to take sad selfies in front of the NFT booths. That's what I would go for.
And maybe see what sort of vaporware we're looking at again. I remember the Phantom.
All right. You guys in chat are cracking me up. SG100 Matt says, the ball pit will be fantastic. Fire Festival E3.
Make it deep enough.
I wonder if I would run into Kojima again. Like I did.
Why would he go?
The other 3 years.
Why would he go?
It's a joke.
There's no need for him.
It's a joke.
No, it is. It is. Well, Konami may actually announce whatever June thing there is. So, in all seriousness, Summer Game Fest now and the announcements that come with that, maybe we'll see a Silent Hill 2 thing come out of that. That could be very interesting. So,
my three happy E3 memories ever was getting to chat through an interpreter with Koji Kondo and getting his autograph. And partially getting to meet Akira Yamaoka and getting my picture taken with Igarashi and making him jump out of his skin when I asked him in Japanese if I could. You were there for that.
I was.
You took the picture.
I did. Yeah. Notice I wasn't in the picture. I just didn't know.
With his hat. That hat. Meeting Igarashi was pretty cool. He's a rock star.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Just a couple more stories and then we can wrap up. So, Loki.
All right. So I think we talked about this before. The Unreal editor that's coming out for Fortnite that basically allows you to kind of make your own games and stuff out of it. It's kind of like...
That was last week. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Roblox, but not like Roblox. It's more like almost like Dreams a little bit. But people have already been making things out of it, and it looks pretty fantastic. We have things, of course, recreating other games is something that has been a common theme. So
World 1-1?
No World 1-1, but, you know, Grove Street from Grand Theft Auto 5. You have people recreating Counter-Strike levels, Mario Kart tracks, the castle from Super Mario 64, that type of stuff. And even folks have brought in the original map from Fortnite into Fortnite. And you can actually play it too, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do with this, but I'm not sure how the games are going to be presented in there, how you can actually play all this stuff. But it sounds cool.
Yeah. It's only been a week. But what cracked me up most about that story was somebody put the original Fortnite map back in Fortnite, because of course they did.
I like the original.
Fortnite can't get away with changing those, but well, they will, of course. But it's just funny. People are always going to miss the old shit, and now they can use this to put it right back in there, which is funnier. So, all right. And lastly, tonight we have news on the next game from the creators of Genshin Impact, which is a game I tried to get into. It didn't really land for me. Maybe this one will. I don't know. But it's a game called Honkai Star Rail. It's going to be coming out on PC and mobile, and they say a PlayStation version will be coming later for 5 and 4. This is now a space fantasy tactical RPG, and it's turn-based, unlike Genshin Impact, which almost feels like kind of Breath of the Wild gone anime a little bit, mixed with some traditional RPG elements. But Honkai is going to be a turn-based RPG, which could be very interesting. There are trailers, but the trailers don't tell you shit. They're just basically anime characters and all that stuff and trying to get you into it. The story will follow a protagonist with a Stellaron implant. That is a mysterious life form that responds to the world's desire to advance. On a quest to discover the truth about the, their words, cancer of all worlds. The tutorial level is on Herta Space Station, and then you go to a snow planet, Jarilo 6, and other diverse world. It is a free-to-play game, and of course that means they're going to use gacha mechanics, loot boxes, characters, items to monetize.
Do you go to diverse systems?
No. This is a free-to-play game. It's going to be rated T for teen. It will be on PC, but it is exclusive to Epic Game Store on PC. But it'll also be available on iOS and Android, and then eventually a PlayStation version. And that seemed to be when Genshin really took off. So it'll be interesting to see how this does at first, but we'll see. So, all right. That's it for the stories we have on deck currently. I did want to mention, oddly didn't come up in the rest of the show, but there were some big conventions going on this weekend, namely Game Developers Conference, which some of these things, which funny enough, you know, that whole Counter-Strike 2 thing that was timed at the exact same time as Epic's big thing at Game Developer Conference. Coincidence?
I think not,
but just something interesting to know. But Game Developers Conference was this weekend, of course. And so, you know, not that Game Developers Conference is a place where they do a lot of announcements, but sometimes we get things out of it, right? Like Sony has been known to show off things. Like, I want to say the Move was there, you know, some time ago. Sometimes it might be about more like peripherals and those sorts of things to like future developments of these things. But you usually don't get a lot of gaming news out of GDC. PAX East was also this weekend. Again, not a place you get a ton of news usually, but there are oftentimes panels that can even be put on by developers. And so actually, I know there was a Final Fantasy 14 panel as well as a Final Fantasy 16 panel because Yoshida was there. But it didn't seem like there was a lot of new information out of those panels, except apparently, you know, if you believe it, and I don't see why not, Yoshi-P was playing Final Fantasy 16 on a PlayStation 5 live. Like, they had the controller there and they were playing the game live. So it's that close to being done, which for a June release, you would expect it needs to be at that kind of state at this point. It may not be like gold, but at real close at this point. So, yeah. And DJ Rama S also points off a ton of other gaming adjacent, nerdy conventions and other places too. WonderCon, ZenkaiaCon, GalaxyCon, all of those are this week. I had a friend at WonderCon. So it's, yeah, busy. And I know the cast of, at least some of the cast of Anime Jam Session was at ZenkaiaCon because I saw DJ Rama's post. So.
ZenkaiCon.
No, ZenkaiCon.
ZenkaiCon.
I keep adding an extra vowel. All right. So anyway, let's go to the listener roundtable. We want to check in with some emails. Participate at orangelaunchradio.com is the place to send some emails. You can also join our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, if you want to be able to call the show. We have a room that says green room, and we'll take calls there. So let's get to the mailbag. Participate at orangelaunchradio.com.
Too much crap on my desk. So we do have an email.
Yay.
One.
Uno.
If you're ready?
Yes.
Hello, LR. So hi, YYR. You may already have mentioned this earlier in the show, but for the possible benefits of the live listeners, I just want to reiterate one thing. Tonight, March 26th could be your last opportunity to purchase games, DLC, and other items from the Nintendo eShop, either on 3DS or Wii U. Nintendo's own language is vague. As of March 27th, 2023, it will no longer be possible to make purchases. So as we don't know whether the shop is shutting down tonight at midnight Pacific time, tomorrow morning, or at some other time tomorrow, it would be prudent to assume that tonight is your last chance. I was wondering if it was going to be on Tokyo time. Anyway.
Yeah.
While this is not the first digital store shut down on a major platform, it's certainly the most significant to date. We are not often lamenting the loss of DLC on the original Xbox or the loss of the PlayStation mobile games on Vita, but here we are losing a significant portion of Nintendo's history, spanning over 10 years and even more than that if you consider that this will mark the end of Virtual Console. Yes, it will no longer be possible to outright buy digital copies of Nintendo's classic games. After tomorrow, you can only subscribe to them via Nintendo Switch Online. It is still possible to add funds to your 3DS and Wii U as long as you linked them to your Nintendo account, just add funds either on your Switch or on Nintendo's website, and they will instantly appear on your linked 3DS and Wii U consoles. It will also be possible to re-download content after the closure, so don't worry about that. Here is a partial list of things that will be disappearing tomorrow that you might not have considered. All of the games available via Street Pass Mi Plaza, Street Pass itself will still work. All of the DLC available for all of the Fire Emblem games released on 3DS. This includes the entire final campaign of the Fire Emblem Fates, which is only otherwise available on the physical special edition, which now goes for over $500 on eBay. The Nintendo DS Virtual Console games available on Wii U, which will allow you to use your TV as the top screen and the Wii U gamepad as the bottom screen. All of the hundreds of available free demos, the ability to unlock minigames in Rusty's Real Deal Baseball, as well as the ability to progress through the story of the game itself. The digital versions of Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, Gold, Silver, and Crystal, which allow you to transfer Pokemon forward into other 3DS games or the new Pokemon Home. The Pokemon Bank app, which you'll need if you want to transfer anything forward from any of the pre-Switch Pokemon games. The ridiculous love child of Derby Owners Club and Tri-Peak Solitaire that is Pocket Card Jockey. Trust me on this one, it's $6 well spent. Just one more reminder that DLC in the Nintendo 3DS games is only available via the games themselves. In some cases, you'll need to progress beyond a certain point before the DLC becomes available. For example, in New Super Mario Bros. 2, you need to finish World 1 before you can buy the Coin Rush Course packs. Good luck to everyone, and try not to spend too much, and of course, enjoy your week. I spent way too much money, Aaron YYR.
Well, thanks for the heads up, Aaron. We did talk a little bit about this last week, but... go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say what Mike said, Pocket Card Jockey is on Apple Arcade.
There was a little bit of YYR is talking with somebody in Discord about that and kind of giving his case for why there may still be some reason to get the 3DS version, even with the Apple Arcade version out there. But that's really a preference thing at this point. But I was going to point out, we did talk a little bit about this last week, but I know YYR has been traveling because I saw where the gifts were coming from, YYR, in Pokemon, which I wish you'd let me know. But that's all right. That's all right.
And cute, by the way.
What's that?
The game is super cute. Oh, yeah, it's cute.
I did like in there that there were a lot of suggestions because we were asking for those last week, and I had forgotten about things like Pocket Card Jockey and, you know, some of those other things he kind of gets into there. So I like the recommendation list there. I do want to say, with all that being said, there is a part of me, and I kind of referenced this earlier in the show, there's a part of me that's like, you know what, at this point, I don't want to reward Nintendo for what they're doing here, because you're right, Nintendo. And so I'm not policing anyone else's activity. Y'all spend your money on what makes you happy. I'm just going to be completely, bluntly, brutally honest. If the store is closing at this point and Nintendo is effectively done with support for these systems, then I'm waiting for the next homebrew to come out to crack the shit out of these things, because Nintendo probably won't patch it. They might. They still might. I feel like they'll wake up their team enough to be able to do that. But I think we're going to get some pretty solid homebrew stuff. And essentially, the piracy is going to be wide open for this. And I was like, do I care at this point? No, because Nintendo has literally taken the legitimate avenue away. So, but let's also be honest. Am I itching to get in there and play 3DS games and Wii U games, especially with what else is going on this year? Not really. But I also understand, and I've openly admitted this on the show, I don't usually play a lot of games on the go, and there are a lot of people that feel very differently about gaming, who love to play on the Switch, who love to play on the 3DS. Cool. So, I mean, again, you got to do what you got to do. For me, I don't want to give Nintendo any more money over this. At this point, I'll turn to piracy if there's something, or emulation is probably what it'll really be by the time I really want to get around to something. I'll turn to emulation to look at playing some of these games from the past that I'd like to do. So, but we should also endorse the legitimate routes. I realize it's a slippery slope. There you go. We have some calls.
Slip arguments by their nature are fallacious.
Let's get into the green room. We have some calls waiting to get on air tonight. So let's get to it. I'm going to start bringing some folks on, and let's bring our first caller on. And hello, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hi, this is Fixation Gaze, a friend of Jamie's and a short time enjoyer of the VOG network.
Well, hello, hello. Yes, I recognize you from Team Yeet. I believe you all call yourselves over there on Dark Cyber's channel.
We're infamous.
Yes. So yeah. Welcome to Orange Lounge Radio.
Our branded jackets are coming soon. But thank you for having me. I've never done a call-in before, but one of the topics I wanted to bring up is something that makes me especially happy recently is the Resident 4 remake.
Yes, because a friend of mine was playing this and I was watching him play this. It looks so good. Yes, please elaborate. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to preface this with Resident Evil is a longtime hyperfixation of mine. So seeing the remake has been almost like kind of a sacrilegious kind of experience, because it's like they keep some of the things that make it so integral and so good, but then they also add things. And at first it's like, oh gosh, change is scary, which is normal for people who are hardcore fans. But then they turn it into something like absolutely excellent. Such as one of the biggest things that they changed that a lot of people won't really see when they just play through the game normally is when you break boxes now, instead of like taking out your knife, now Leon does a little kick. And that's something you wouldn't notice with a normal gameplay. Hmm. But with, you know, like, compare and contrast exactly back to the old games. One of the biggest things that some people didn't like was how it was slow to take out your knife and hit boxes, and now it's sped up in a way that's believable. So it was terrifying to see like a new aspect of something I care very deeply about, but they've treaded that ground with such care and respect that I really applaud Capcom on this. But I also do have to bring up a lot of people have been talking about how it glitches and how it's causing computer crashes and not working as well as it should.
That's
something to bring up.
Hopefully it's something they can kind of address with patches, which I know we all hate that this is where the industry is at, but the reality is this is where the industry is at. And I tend to cut these companies a little more slack when it comes to PC gaming, because the reality is every PC configuration is different. So it is kind of hard to test every configuration. So I cut a little more slack on PC based issues, because it can be hard to find those things. So at least there's that potential to patch that stuff later on. And hopefully Capcom stays on top of that. I think they will. Their track record kind of shows they're pretty good about the patching, and they can get some of those issues fixed. But considering what a legendary game Resident Evil 4 is, I mean, there's many people that consider that is the best GameCube game, period. And maybe even other platforms too. The fact that this is a bit of an upgrade, when not everything lately in the remaster department has been an upgrade. The Secret of Mana remake kind of had some bad issues with it. Trials of Mana came out a little better and I think maybe redeemed things, but Secret of Mana really should have been better than it was. Chrono Cross, we were talking about that. Finally, a year after the fact, Radical Dreamers Edition gets a patch to fix it, but the remaster, so it's nice to hear that Capcom is kind of getting a lot of W's in these, you know, Resident Evil. Because I know the earlier remasters were pretty well received too, but this was the one people were really waiting for, because it's like, don't screw up four.
Yeah. Because of how dense of a game four really is and how much it draws from and takes inspiration, because, like, you know, we're dealing with like a virus that takes control of people's minds via parasites, and we're dealing with politics, and we're dealing with giants and fish monsters. There is so much in this game that is extremely easy to get it wrong. It really is. So the fact that they've taken it with grace, and like it feels good to go through the game. It doesn't feel like any of it's rushed. It feels like it's open enough. There's a lot of double backing. They've added like new little side quests, which are a lot of fun. But I feel like they've taken Resident Evil 4, and I think they did it really well. They've of course removed some of the original funny lines, but they've kept a lot of what makes Leon at this phase in what is quote unquote his life, because of course this is a game character, but they've stayed true to what he was in Resident Evil 4. And so far, from what I've seen, I haven't played through the whole game, mind you, they have stayed true to what Ashley is. And that was another big thing about Resident Evil 4 originally, was how fucking annoying she was. But it seems like they've toned her down while also staying to her personality. And that is something that's very important to me for the validity of it being a remaster.
You know, and sometimes these remakes really do redeem certain characters. I think back to the Final Fantasy VII remake and Aerith. And I think Jamie, I remember even you saying, you know, she doesn't bother me in the remake as much as she did in the original. But her
fucking annoying as she was Cloud. Yeah.
And the voice actress did a tremendous job as well. Should be commended for that.
Absolutely.
Don't have my save file so I can fight Genova and then watch her die.
Let me ask you this, because I know we want to get to another call before we wrap up the show, but I want to ask you this as someone who is a self-described Resident Evil fan. You know, do you hope that they keep going with these remakes? Do you want to see an RE5? I know 5 and 6 weren't quite as well received in the bigger picture. Do you want them to try again with those games, or where do you kind of hope these remakes go? Or are you like, stop here, quit when you're ahead, stop here, don't do anymore?
So this might be a controversial take because I speak on behalf of me, but not really like Resident Evil fans as a whole, because we're kind of divided on some things. But honestly, with the resources they have now and the ideas and how they've seen things turn out, I think they should give it another shot, rework some of those games, and release them to be better. I think they should absolutely go through with remaking the whole original series before the new arc, which is the Ethan Winters arc that comes in 7 and 8. But I think they should, because they really tried to bite more than they could chew when they made those games originally, and they should do it. I think they should. They should put their money where their mouth is and do it all.
Well, you have at least one person in chat agreeing with you, because Shane says they better remake 6. So
absolutely.
All right, Fixie, real quick before we let you go, I know you are in the process
of everyone calling you Fixie.
I know you're in the process of trying to grow your own. Is that a nickname you prefer? I'm only calling you that because Jamie calls you that.
You're fine. Okay. I've gotten a lot of variations on my username, and I think Fixie is my favorite so far.
Okay. So I know you're trying to grow your own Twitch channel. I gave you a shout out on our channel, but do you want to quickly just kind of plug your channel and what folks can expect over on your Twitch channel?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, so my channel and my Twitch is what I primarily do is I play a lot of Dead by Daylight, but I'm hoping as I upgrade my hardware and I stick to a schedule that I go into more of the horror demographic because I used to be a balloon streamer, and that is very much anti everything horror. It is very soft. It's very noises, just, you know, like soft repetitive noises.
Yes.
But my next big goal is to play the entirety of the Outlast series, and then I want to start and do the entire Resident Evil series.
Well, somebody, I'm going to tell you this, you won't catch me ever doing a playthrough of Outlast, so you are braver than I.
I had a hyperfixation on Outlast Whistleblower, which is by far to me one of the most horrific DLCs that has ever been made.
Oh my gosh. That was the game Amnesia I was thinking of, where I saw this YouTube where somebody, I think it was the sequel Amnesia, where somebody started it and literally within 5 seconds they go, nope, and they close the game because it scared the shit out of them.
The first time I ever played Outlast, I had to keep the lights on in the room. And I remember I was playing with friends because we had decided if one of us gets too scared, another person will hop on and continue. And they kept turning the lights off for quote unquote atmosphere. And I said, I swear to God, if you do not turn that light on right now, I am not playing this. But now that I've gotten to be more of a horror buff and a lot more acclimated to screaming due to Dead by Daylight and the jump scares that happen in a multiplayer game, I think I'm ready to do it by myself with the lights off.
Oh my gosh. No. I remember when I played Silent Hill Homecoming for the first time. I was playing it on Xbox at home in the middle of a rainstorm, and I was playing with the lights off, which is fine, whatever. But as I was playing the game and they get to a scary scene, the rain and wind blew the front door open because I guess I'd forgot to lock it. And that's when I said, Nope. I closed the door, immediately powered off the Xbox, went into my room, and totally did the blanket burrito, where I said, this is where I live now.
Moved into a blanket.
I started out actually being scared of Call of Duty zombies. And now I used to be terrified of everything scary, but now I have fully immersed myself into the scary culture. I read scary stories in my old house with no lights on in the hallways, and I keep my door open and I go to sleep. I have fully tamed it out of me, and I'm going to do some scary stuff. So you guys should totally check me out on my Twitch channel if you like scary things.
All right. Well,
and Fixie and I co-stream.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I saw you streaming the other night and you both were. Yeah, I saw that. So, all right. Well, Fixie, best of luck with the growth of your own channel. I'm going to let you go so we can get another call in here before we end tonight. But thanks so much for calling and good luck with the games and
your channel
growth.
Thank you so much
for
having me.
You're welcome. Anytime. Take care. All right.
I'm feeling that Fixie and I need to have like a watch party where we watch Midsommar.
Oh, my gosh. Is Midsommar on the Amazon service or whatever?
I don't know.
Anyway.
I have it on my Apple TV. Oh, it's on Prime. Cool. I love that movie. I love like the full version of it.
We got to go to one more call here. I definitely want to hear from this individual as well. We haven't heard from him in a little while, so let's bring them on the air. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hello, it's Sturlock.
Hey, Sturlock. Thanks for being patient while we took another call. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. It's not my main topic, but I wanted to add an addendum to YYR's email.
Please, because it's now or never.
Yeah. If you're in the U.S., you're extra screwed because one of the best rhythm games is going away and impossible to buy in the U.S., and that is Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix.
Yeah.
Released physically everywhere else but the U.S. So that's fun.
Yep. A lot of people lamenting the loss of that one. I know that's come up in our Discord several times. Yep.
Great game. One of the best rhythm games ever made. I really, really, really hope Rhythm Heaven gets a Switch game. Even if it's just a re-release of Megamix, I would be happy.
Well, you'll be happy to know Bobby Blackwolf says that's the game that he bought on his 3DS this week.
Oh, good. It was a great game.
So what else is on your mind tonight?
But the main thing I wanted to talk about was Diablo 4.
I was hoping this might be the case because we were talking on not Twitter, the other one. Mastodon a little bit about this. How have you been enjoying the and for those that have never heard you on the show before, you are blind and you love the hell out of games, so you oftentimes kind of enlighten us on the accessibility. And actually, I know, and I gave you a shout out in chat as well, because I know on your Twitch channel I've learned a lot from watching you play games like The Last of Us, how accessibility settings, like how they help. It's one thing to know like what's there, what's all available, but being able to see you use these things like as you're playing the game really helps me understand how they really help. So I'm actually, but just to set that up for people who may not know you, I'm really curious.
Just this afternoon I was playing Hades with some accessibility mods that game has. And,
nice.
Hades is fantastic. Even without accessibility mods, it's still pretty playable.
Mm-hmm.
The mods just add some nice, quality of life things, specifically for blind people. Take a lot of the guesswork out of doing some things.
So, what's your take on Diablo 4?
Diablo 4 is fantastic.
And what about it gets you happy and excited?
Well, for one, text-to-speech menus, fantastic. It's a little buggy currently in certain spots, like the options menu. But I have full faith that that's stuff that's going to be fixed, on launch release.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking feedback, so it's, they're going to be well aware of this stuff. The other thing I would say is I do wish we had some sort of nav assist a la Last of Us, because this is a much, much bigger world than mm-hmm. Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, game's not even out yet. I think we will get something. I don't know what form that's going to take, but I think we will get some sort of assistance as far as that's concerned. But the other big positive is that since we have text-to-speech, we can manage our own gear. Names of items and what they do, what their stats, that all reads for us. And as a Diablo 3 player, that, you know, blind people can't manage their gear. That's like the really the one thing that you absolutely positively need a sighted person to do for you is gear management. Mm-hmm. And we don't need that anymore. And it's fantastic.
Like audio feedback's gotten a lot better because I've noticed on certain operating systems that VoiceOver is a lot better than it was.
Yeah. Yeah, for whatever reason, the on PS4/PS5, it's not as robust, and I think that just has to do with maybe it's a slightly older build, but I think it's going to have parity at launch. I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
But the other really amazing thing that they did for us specifically is you have to turn it on in the options menu, but items and gold, you know, loot essentially has background ambience. So you can tell when things are on the ground.
So yes, like, oh, I've noticed that. It's a version of that is on by default for legendaries.
Oh, that's it's on by default for legendaries?
Yeah, because I hear like a shimmer type of noise when you're sending your legendary. Yeah.
Yeah, and the rarity too. The different rarities have different sounds associated with them. It's like, that's just a common. I can ignore that. Like, whatever. And you can break it down too if you want. Like, so if you don't care about like, just ignore all the commons, you can absolutely do that. You can even break it down. I only care about weapons, or only care about like chess pieces or whatever. You can absolutely do that.
Hmm.
The amount of control you have over it is pretty awesome.
Do you think I remember one of the last times you called in, and granted it was a little while ago now, but I remember we were kind of mourning the loss of Hearthstone, you know, had a add-on that was really helping folks, and you were really hoping that Blizzard would kind of take up, you know, things with that to help the community be able to play Hearthstone. Do you feel like Blizzard, you know, now is being receptive to feedback from the community and these sorts of things?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There was actually an update to that whole situation. I don't know if you reported on it, but Blizzard themselves have come out and said that because of the outcry and the support for Hearthstone, that they are looking into adding in native accessibility for Hearthstone themselves.
That's great.
The other really cool thing is that we didn't actually lose access to Hearthstone for all that long because the Hearthstone access patch/mod, whatever you want to call it, has basically become a community-driven project.
I thought that part, I think I do remember hearing about that the community kind of took over maintenance of that. And yeah, I've heard that happen in some other cases before, but that's great to be able to keep that going. But that's really awesome that Blizzard is, you know, listening to that sort of feedback and really like making these types of meaningful implementations that you can like really feel in a game like Diablo 4 when you're playing it. And that's great. So.
Oh, and another thing to add to Hearthstone, which makes me think that they're taking this pretty seriously.
Yeah.
Is somebody looked into, I guess there were some like patch notes or a roadmap update for Unity accessibility. And they called out Blizzard specifically by name. There was a patch note that talks about text-to-speech or like control elements or something to that effect. Specifically for Blizzard, or for use with Blizzard games, like they went out of their way to call them out by name. So I think we could actually have accessible mobile Hearthstone, which would be pretty epic, actually.
Well, fingers and toes crossed, so they can get there.
I really do feel like Blizzard is taking accessibility extremely seriously. And actually, one of my friends, Super Blind Man, is in the Hearthstone Creator Program now. So,
That's awesome.
It's really awesome. You know, controversies aside, you know,
you still, you know, yeah,
there,
we have
there
to
are people at Blizzard that do very good things,
right? And we have to call out the problems when the problems come up, but we can also acknowledge, like, hey, this company took feedback and made meaningful changes as a result of that feedback. Let's applaud that. And I think that's why I'm thankful you called in tonight to talk about how far the accessibility has come in Diablo 4. Is it completely there yet? No. But are we moving in a meaningful direction? Sure sounds like it.
It's a huge step in the right direction. I had fairly low expectations. I figured we'd get maybe a one or two things, but like the framework that's already here is really impressive, and I can't wait to see what else they do with it.
All right, well, Sterlak, I have to let you go so we can wrap up the show, but thank you so much for the call, and I give you a shout out in chat. I hope folks will consider following along and really getting your perspective on games, because I think it's really enlightening. So as we continue this conversation about accessibility on into the future. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Have a good one, Sterlak, and I look forward to running Diablo 4 stuff with you in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Good to hear from you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take care.
Good to be here. All right. See ya.
Bye. All right. We had some good calls tonight, but it is getting a little late, so I want to make sure we wrap up the show and have it all done before it's midnight on the East Coast. But to do that, I want to check in real quick, just quickly check in. Are any last-minute stories we want to address, Loki?
Yeah, two things real quick. Yep. So first is Microsoft is ending their $1 Xbox Game Pass offer that they've had for a long time.
Oh, I didn't even know that was still a thing.
So, yes, unfortunately, they are getting rid of that now. Instead, they're saying that anyone signed up for Game Pass said we'll see months from existing subscriptions converted into partial months on a sharing plan. If you're currently signed up for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, the remaining months will turn into 18 days of Games Pass friends and family or something like that. When they're talking about like the successor Game Pass friends and family, I guess. But yeah, they're going to have different promotions as well to basically fill the void, I guess. But I mean, it wasn't always going to be $1 forever. Another thing I did want to mention, though, is I was asked by the guy that runs Nestmaker. So he has a collection that he's been putting together. So in partnership with the Strong Museum of Play, they have a collection of games. Basically, it's in New York. It's a museum. You can go there. You can play video games. They do archival stuff as well. So I get to, along with some of the other Nestmaker people, put my game available to play there as well. So my game will be part of the Strong Museum Collection 2023, which I am.
Loki, are you saying that they put you in a museum?
They put me in a museum, yeah. I think they're probably accessing the website, but yes, in a roundabout way, it will be in a museum.
Loki, it doesn't get much better than that. That's a hell of a thing to have on your resume of what you've accomplished in this life. Congratulations.
They were showing, they had a
Nestmaker. I agree with SSJ100, Matt. Somebody buried the fucking lead tonight. You could have talked about this in your gaming week. This is big news.
I just thought about it at the last second, but like they had a Nestmaker panel also at PAX East, which I'd be curious to see how that went.
I hope it's on YouTube.
Yeah, I hope so. I'd like to watch that. But yeah, it'd be fun. At least you'll be able to play the demo of the game. I didn't put the full game on there. I would have made the full game available in the museum only, but like there wasn't really a way to do that. But you have the demo version and you can play at least.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Congratulations on that. That's awesome. All right, but again, way to bury the lead. All right, let's go around. Let me quickly thank everybody for listening tonight. Thank you for tuning into Orange Lounge Radio and supporting this show. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please tell a friend or an AI chatbot about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices. Real humans only, please, to put out on air to chat with cats and dogs are acceptable too, but mostly people and other. Then the bird fan's going to email and be like, you left out bird. Okay, look, you know what I mean. Thank you so much for supporting. Tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word. You know, a nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes, Spotify, wherever it is you found this show, that goes a long way. So we really appreciate all of that. That's that. Let's go around and get everybody's final thought. Dark Sakura, I'm sure we're going to see you swiffing and whatever we say there.
Sliding.
Swiffing, yeah. And sliding. Yeah.
Well, and Fixie and I will be co-streaming.
Oh, fun.
And I think we're going to have Shayla tonight, and I have messaged Gwen. So Team Yeet will be yeeting around. Maybe we'll actually do a yeet match. But yeah, and if I may make a mention of something else.
Yeah.
I'm having a subathon on my birthday. That's April 19th, starting at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And I'm going to try to go the full 24 hours because oof. I'm brave and stupid. And if I can hit a total of 250 subs in my channel, I will bleach my hair on stream.
Oh, that's a big goal, but that's a fun on stream. That's a fun reward. So,
and then I will promptly re-dye it red. No, we'll see what happens. Maybe like for additional ones, I'll add in another color.
All right.
We'll see what happens. No, I've got full on platinum Nutrice brand, and I have Olaplex. I have the stuff to do it and do it safely. So, right. If I get hot roots, that's just more incentive to re-dye it. We'll see what I doubt I'm going to get it, but who knows?
You never know. Got to be ready for it.
And I might play nurse if I get 150.
All right. Well, have a good stream tonight. We'll see you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. All right, Loki. That means it's over to you. What's your final thought for tonight?
New episode should be out this week, featuring Axolotl Woman's area. It's pretty amazing. Can't wait for you to see it.
All right. I haven't been streaming a lot this week because of all the cat drama I talked about earlier in the show. And now my husband's in Twitch jail. But I should be streaming on my personal channel at some point this week. I actually don't terribly know what I'm going to play next. I've been toying with the idea of going back to the older Pokemon game, well, not that old, but the Pokemon games I never finished, especially now that home integration is included. I kind of am itching to go back and play Pokemon Arceus. I don't know if y'all in chat would be interested in that, but give me a shout if you want me to check out Pokemon Arceus. I'm also, at some point, I'll pick up Pokemon Scarlet as well, but I'm just, for some reason, I'm really itching on Arceus. I don't know why. Like that one, I'm like, why didn't I finish that game? But now that the home integration is there too. I love doing the little mini collection quests and building my ultimate Pokemon collection in home. I'm kind of down for that. So, all right. Well, thank you for all the kind love in chat. Maybe that is something I will do. I got to do something to hold me over until June when Diablo, Final Fantasy 16, all this stuff comes out. So yeah, get some games to hold us over. All right. Thank you again, everyone, for supporting Orange Lounge Radio and our podcast. We really appreciate you all. 953 weeks and counting. And can't wait to see you all in 7 days. We'll do it again. Have a great week, everyone. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true.